Talk Live. Welcome to the program here. You can join us if you want. You can talk about whatever's on your mind. The number is 603-283-6160. I suspect that a lot of people still have the financial situation. Can we call it a crisis?
I think it's a good thing, so no.
On people's minds, you think what's a good thing?
If the banks fail.
Well, some banks have failed, right? So, like, that's why we're talking about this, because last week, Silicon Valley Bank, at the end of the week, failed and was taken over by federal and state regulators. And then over the weekend, another bank, Signature Bank, also a crypto-friendly bank, failed. Barney Frank, who was on the board of directors of that bank, said that he believes that this was a targeting by the federal government, because some are saying that the bank didn't actually fail, that it was just seized by federal regulators. Anyway, it's Ian and Bonnie here in the studio tonight. Remotely, we have...
me, Mark.
And also joining us, Aaron Day, the Republican presidential candidate out of New Hampshire and early Free State Project mover. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. I actually wanted to have you in to talk about this financial situation, because you've been following it very closely. I've been watching a lot of your tweets online. Of course, your campaign website is day2024.com, and you are on Twitter at Aaron R. Day. So it looks like everything's okay now, right? The banks came back up in the stocks today. There was a rebound. You know, the big bank losses from yesterday, a lot of them got not all the way back up, but they came back up, you know, 25% or 30% or whatever. So
bonds are up. Gold's up.
Biden was right. The banking system's safe. Everything's okay, right, Aaron?
Well, I mean, this is the whole point. The whole fiat currency situation is a confidence game to begin with. So they need to act like everything is okay, which is something that they're doing on a coordinated basis. So you're going to see everybody on CNBC, everybody on mainstream media is going to come out and say they've taken all the right actions. I remember this from 2008 when we had that financial crisis, and it was the same thing. Every other day, the stock market would either drop 700 points, then it would rebound. But then when you read the book or watch the movie Too Big to Fail, you find out that behind the scenes, it was an absolute disaster. And everything was basically an existential threat going on one day. You know, each day there was a new existential threat to the system. So I don't think we're by any means out of the woods. In fact, I think what's happened is a travesty. I think what we're moving towards are what are called bail-ins, where Biden went out and said the taxpayers aren't going to pay for the bailout of SVB. But in actuality, I think it's going to end up being the depositors in banks, just like what happened in Cyprus several years ago. They're going to be the ones caught holding the bag.
Yeah, well, what we saw in the press release from the Federal Reserve yesterday was that they're going to use whatever's in the deposit insurance fund, which was, according to the chart that I pulled up from the FDIC's website, was only $128 billion. And so that's not enough to cover the first bank that failed, which was Silicon Valley Bank, that had, I think, close to $200 billion in customer deposits. So they're going to already have to go to the well, which is the well in this case, they say, is a quote-unquote special assessment on the banks. Now, of course, anybody who knows how taxation works is whenever a corporation has to pay more in taxes, they just pass that on to the customers. So ultimately, it's absolutely going to be bank customers who are going to pay this. Now, how that's going to come out, it's probably, I would guess, going to be even worse interest rates than ever before, and maybe increased fees in various different ways. I mean, that seems like the only way they could easily extract that from their customers. Like, if you were getting 0.02%, now you're going to get 0.002% on your crappy savings account.
Well, and it's going to take liquidity out of the system. So money that's not going to be circulating in the system is now going to be going to the FDIC as supposed insurance. And this is something a lot of people don't really think about. They think, oh, I have insurance, that means it's safe. But what they don't realize is insurance itself is risky, and insurance can go broke. And that's something people never think about. They never think about the fact that, well, could a health insurance company go broke? Could a life insurance company go broke? Could the FDIC go broke? The FDIC only had reserves for 1.26% of the deposit. So you're right. I used to think that at least a while ago, they held reserves for two to three bank failures, two to three large bank failures. Now, as you said, it's less than one. If one of the top six banks went under, that's it. The FDIC fund is wiped out. And so we're now already in that situation. And clearly there's contagion. We had Silvergate Bank failed first. Then we had SVB. Then we had Signature Bank. So I guess if you're a bank that starts with SI, I'd be looking pretty nervous right now. So,
well, the government, I mean, excuse me, it's called insurance. So people are comforted by the notion that they're insured against failure. But I think one thing that ought to be pointed out about the 2008-2009 crisis, however, wherever you want to pin it on the calendar, is that although the government did a few instances where, you know, George Bush and then later Barack Obama authorized the United States government, therefore the taxpayer, to sort of prop up the economy in a variety of different ways, most of the money that was sort of created out of thin air was created by the Federal Reserve, which, for those that are in the know, is neither federal nor are there reserves. And, you know, the Federal Reserve just created money, gave it to banks to put on hold as deposits. The reason that we didn't see wild inflation from the what they called quantitative easing at the time, the reason that there wasn't wild inflation is the banks didn't release the money into the marketplace. There wasn't an increase in M0, M1, M2, not a dramatic increase anyway, not enough to affect pricing, but it stabilized the banks in so much as they had money on deposit. They needed it for fractional reserve at the time. This was before Trump got rid of that particular necessity. Now, it may be true that that was the reason that the banks are failing now, but it may give them the opportunity to bounce back up more quickly. I don't know, but I am keeping an eye on this, and I'm very curious.
Well, there's a problem right now, because if you look at 2008, so what did we have in 2008 that drove this crisis? We had the mortgage crisis.
Yeah.
Well, actually, every asset class is a bubble right now. Mortgages, auto loans, commercial loans, sovereign debt, every single asset class is in a bubble that is equal to or greater than 2008. So the underlying situation in the economy and the financial system is actually worse than 2008. On top of that, we printed 40% of the dollars ever in existence in 2020 as part of the COVID tyranny response.
Right.
So we are in a much more precarious overall situation right now in general with the banking system. And there's something alarming going on right now, which is that, you know, again, they're going out and acting as if this emergency action solved things. But what's really going on is regional banks, people are going to their regional banks and taking their money out of regional banks and depositing it in big banks like Citibank, Bank of America, et cetera. This is creating a crisis for the regional banks. And this is a bad situation because they decided arbitrarily to bail out Silicon Valley Bank. Remember, FDIC insurance was really supposed to only cover $250,000.
That's right.
I think 93% of Silicon Valley Bank's deposits were uninsured, and yet they covered it anyway, exhausting almost all of the fund. And so now we're in a situation where people are going to their regional banks, taking their money out, leaving a hole in the regional banks. But is the government going to come in and say, we think that these regional banks are systemically important? Are they going to let the regional banks fail and allow for more consolidation so that at the end of this process, we end up with only the big banks?
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's
terrifying.
You bring up a really important point here, Aaron, because if we look at every financial situation, everything that's sort of, you know, come up on our radar for the last 20 years, who's benefited? Well, I mean, pretty obviously, the millionaires and billionaires have benefited, right? Like those who have the connections and those who have the power. So regional banks, comparative to the member banks of the Federal Reserve, which isn't federal and there are no reserves, that, you know, obviously they don't have the clout. They're just little tiny franchise owners. They're not actually members of the Federal Reserve. And so the Federal Reserve is going to make sure that their boys, because this is the organization that runs the world, whether we want to believe it or not. This is the reason, in my opinion, that Ian was convicted, is because the banks are trying to get rid of cryptocurrency. And the boogeyman here is going to be In this case, probably cryptocurrency. In the last case, it was people who shouldn't have had mortgages in the first place. And maybe they shouldn't have had mortgages in the first place, but they did, and they didn't deserve to lose them.
So you think going to blame all of this on crypto? Because that would make a lot of sense.
No, no, Bonnie. I think that they're going to take responsibility for their actions over the course of the last century and a half to take responsibility for themselves for devaluing a currency that they've lied about. Because the dollar, by the way, is a measurement of silver. It's an indication of a weight of silver.
It
used to be worth $20 used to be troy ounce of gold. There was a precious metal amount that these things were, and the government has devalued them completely. The British sovereign was called, the pound sterling was called pound sterling because it was a pound of sterling silver. Mm-hmm. And they use these terms to make you feel comfortable in what they're doing, but these things aren't backed by anything.
Aaron, you posted today. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
They aren't backed by anything. And that's something that I find when I'm talking to people. The reason I'm running for president is actually because I actually had gotten out of politics altogether, was 100% focused on crypto. And then I saw what was going on with crypto from a regulatory perspective in terms of not only what was going on with Ian, but the SEC is going to crack down on 99% of cryptos. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're a centralized project, if you raised money, if you are not a proof of work cryptocurrency, you're likely to get wiped out.
Right.
And So we're seeing this big shift towards against crypto and then against small business. So I think they'll try to scapegoat first crypto, and then they'll create a regional bank crisis, and then they'll blame the regional banks and small business. All of this is about consolidation, and all of this is ultimately a move towards central bank digital currency, mm-hmm. which is something that Biden has already passed executive order 14067. This is something that's already in the works, that out of the New York Fed starting last December, they're piloting CBDC. There are a handful of countries, including the Bahamas, that already have CBDC. This is something that they want to implement, which once central bank digital currency is in place, that is the gateway to complete tyranny, social credit scores, vaccine passports, you name it. If you see what's going on in China right now, they want to bring that here. So this consolidation towards the big banks is one step closer. And I thought we had 12 to 36 months before that was going to happen. But based on what's happened in the last 4 or 5 days, I think this could be here sooner than we think.
Well, there was already the news, I think, that came out today that, of course, inflation is still chugging along at officially a 6% rate. Of course, we all know those numbers are manipulated, and they have been for a long time. But just accepting that as the bare minimum of what they're doing, the story I was looking at about the inflation numbers say they're expecting the Federal Reserve to raise rates yet again, another quarter point, apparently. So, they're not done with this whole continuing to raise interest rates to record levels in a record amount of time. And according to the people that were looking at the Silicon Valley Bank situation, they're saying that's the reason in the last year these interest rate raises have basically made the bank not able to compete with treasury bonds. And so all these customers from the bank were trying to leave the bank and get into treasury bonds because those rates were going up. And then ultimately the bank had to sell billions of their own holdings in order to try to get enough money to pay out the customers, which they still couldn't do because the run on that bank, even though it was the second largest bank failure of all time, apparently the run on it was even hotter than the one of, I think it was Washington Mutual back in 2008 that failed. Like, they had a run that lasted for like 10 days, and this one was much faster. It was like $45 billion in 24 hours, and that's what brought them down. So, I mean, the Federal Reserve's still going to raise more rates. That's going to lead to more of this happening, isn't it?
It is, and it's by design. This is the goal of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve isn't here to worry about inflation or employment. The role of the Federal Reserve is to print money out of thin air, backed by IOUs from the government, lend that money out to people, and then use raising the interest rates to make it so that people can't pay the money back so that they can then steal their physical assets. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, we're going to hand out a mortgage. we're going to hand out all these mortgages. We're not going to print the interest. We're going to raise the interest rates. We're going to decrease the supply of money, and then we're going to foreclose on your house. We're going to foreclose on your business. This mm-hmm. is what the actual cycle is. The Federal Reserve, this they so-called dual mandate, has nothing to do with that. So the boom-bust cycle is created by this. And this is what the Fed wanted to do. They're ready to go into another cycle of basically coming in and foreclosing on people's physical assets using magic money that they printed out of thin air. And I will say this financial crisis is truly worse than 2008, because there are mm-hmm. some things that have happened here. I'm sure your audience probably knows, but we abandoned the gold standard in 1971. And then banks have what are called reserve requirements. So they're supposed to have 10% of the customer deposits on hand at any one moment in time.
Didn't
now, of
they
course,
wipe that
if
out?
FTX is...
Sorry.
And they wiped that out.
Yeah. Right.
They wiped that out in 2020. So literally, this is a complete and total, if you were in the crypto community, somebody would call that, degenerate gambling. I mean, this is kind mm-hmm. of beyond that. So our financial system has never been more highly leveraged before. And because we've been printing all of this money, people have been making wild investments. And then we get into derivatives, basically, bets on highly leveraged about underlying securities. And that market is even bigger than the actual amount of fiat currency that's in existence. So, for instance, a company like Deutsche Bank, I don't know what the number is now, but a few years ago, Deutsche Bank as a single bank had $47 trillion worth of exposure in the derivatives market. And so if these guys have all of these bets that they're on various sides of, and they blow up, then it creates a chain reaction that pulls down all of the other banks globally. And I had posted, Ian, you had pointed out, I posted mm-hmm. an image on Twitter. What that shows is where Deutsche Bank is in terms of their connections to other banks, in terms of being trading partners for these derivatives. And so if a bank like Deutsche Bank or Credit Suisse goes down, nobody can fathom what the unintended consequences are, because nobody knows what's in these derivatives contracts. But it's of the magnitude of $47 trillion for one bank.
Well, Credit Suisse was in the news today. Their shares fell to an all-time low as the bank announced it had found material weaknesses, according to Daily Mail. And Robert Kiyosaki, the rich dad, poor dad guy, he weighed in saying he thinks that Credit Suisse is next to go.
And it's stretching SI.
It's what?
Oh, well, other than the credit part, the Suisse part. Oh, never mind. Sorry, it's SWI.
But
I think either Credit Suisse has been having problems for months now. I mean, they actually had a mini run on the bank at the end of last year. And so they're really on the edge anyway. But you never know how something like Silicon Valley Bank will set off a wave and nobody knows what the unintended consequences are. That's exactly what happened in 2008 when you had a mortgage crisis. But then all of a sudden, it turns out AIG, who was providing insurance contracts on mortgages, on credit default swaps, they were going to go under. And if AIG went under, that means people's life insurance policies went under. So all of this is interconnected. Nobody knows how it's interconnected. And as we could see with Silicon Valley Bank, and even what we're hearing with Credit Suisse, there's no real risk management going on. Nobody is actually paying any attention to what's going on, and there's no actual oversight. The fact that Silicon Valley Bank could even happen should be startling. But if it happened at Silicon Valley Bank, why would we think it isn't happening at every other bank?
Well, how do you think they're going to turn this on crypto, or do you think that they're going to do that?
They're certainly not going to take personal responsibility. I think they'll somehow try to pin this on, because you're already hearing rumors about this, that somehow FTX is at the heart of this. And so somehow they're going to make that, not that FTX was ever anything about crypto. I mean, FTX is so disconnected from crypto. Their stuff was primarily derivatives anyway. They weren't even selling people crypto. They were selling people
their own private coin.
Their own private coin or IOUs on crypto. I mean, they didn't have the Bitcoin on their exchange that people thought they were buying.
Wow.
So they were running a fractional reserve Bitcoin scam. So there was nothing about crypto that's FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried are not in any way, shape, or form involved in the spirit of crypto. It was centralized in every possible way. But yes, they very well might try to to scapegoat that, because you're already hearing that FTX is the cause of Silicon Valley Bank, and then that's what's leading into Signature. So that is the narrative that they're spinning. And of course, the problem is the media will just follow and repeat whatever the official line is. It's mm-hmm. not like anybody's doing investigative journalism.
Right, Bonnie, what I would say that's going to happen here, just to me guessing from having seen this sort of thing going on, I don't have any insight into what's occurring, but you know, I know how the game's played at this point, and you will see their talking heads, they, them, and those out there, their talking heads will toss out narratives. You know, it had to do with these banks that were selling, that were involved in cryptocurrency. We know how unstable that is, the drug dealers and the terrorists, right? And then they'll toss out the, well, it was those young people having group sex down in the Bahamas at FTX. They were doing some things. And then somebody's going to toss out these regional banks were acting irresponsibly and doing this, that, and the other. Or the foreign banks, the euro, and these sorts of things, they were doing whatever narrative gets some traction that people start liking, that for whatever reason, because, you know, all that matters is that those that create the money are not responsible. All that matters is that they are not responsible, because if they have another Occupy Wall Street situation, they have to put their whole machine into gear again and make sure that, you know, the Tea Party, you know, splits it in one direction, and the, you know, Black Lives Matter goes in the other, and that, you know, whatever it takes to sort of break up this, it's the bankers. Mm-hmm. That are using all of our labor. And Aaron pointed this out, and he pointed it out adroitly, which is that these guys are gambling with money that doesn't exist. They're gambling with money in the future that's supposed to be created. And they're, on one hand, constricting the money supply by increasing interest rates, but they have the pressure to increase the money supply in order to pay for their gambling. We don't have a situation here where they can solve it. Right. Like, you know, if there's a football play, you say, well, they're going to run it down the middle, or they have to throw, and, you know, this kind of thing. All their players have lost their arms.
Aaron,
there's nothing we can do.
Can you stick with us?
Sure, absolutely.
Right. I want to have you on here to we can continue this discussion, and also at the same time of this financial situation, you've got these other Republican candidates out there advocating for a straight-up hot war with drug cartels down in Mexico. I definitely want to get you to weigh in on that. It's just insane proposal. This is Free Talk Live. More coming up. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. Talk Live. You can join the show here. Bring up whatever you want. The number is 603-283-6160. Also, if you have a question for Republican presidential candidate Aaron Day, he's on the line with us. And normally, we don't talk to politicians here on Free Talk Live. It is not something that I'm generally interested in. I find politicians to be a despicable creature for the most part. But Aaron, you're a bit of an unusual case because, number one, you're an early mover for the Free State Project, so you're one of us, if you will. When did you move to New Hampshire?
2009.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So 14, going on 14 years ago. Congratulations on that.
No, thank you. You guys played a big role in that. I remember I was in Boston listening to Free Talk Live at the gym, and it was a big part of the reason I made the move.
Very cool. And you've done some local election stuff. You've run for office at the state level, but this time you decided to throw your hat into the ring into the presidential campaigns, and you're going at it. You've got your campaign website. It's day2024.com. You're also on Twitter at Aaron R. Day. And you've been following this financial situation, which you know some might call a banking crisis, that has been coming, and now maybe it's here with a couple of major bank failures in just the last week or less than a week alone, with Silicon Valley Bank first last weekend, or then this weekend it was the Signature Bank up in New York, which has been seized by regulators. We don't know who's going to go next, but things certainly don't look good for places like Credit Suisse, whose shares have fallen to an all-time low. And as you pointed out on your social media today, apparently the CEO of Credit Suisse mysteriously decided to just refuse a bonus payment of 1.5 million Swiss francs for his first full year on the job. He just said, yeah, no, I don't need that. Maybe that's because they don't have it. What do you think about
that? I was just speculating on that, but who knows? I mean, the liquidity crisis, when you're not even doing fractional reserve banking anymore, who knows if they have any liquidity at all? Like literally, I've said this for a while. If you go to try to take $10,000 out of your bank account, you have to schedule an appointment now.
Mm-hmm.
They won't let you, can't just walk in and take out $10,000. And if you got three of your friends to go to the bank and take out $10,000 each, they wouldn't have it. Like it's really that big of an issue with liquidity. And that's just because at a fundamental level, there aren't even fractional reserves left.
Right. Scary. This is a fascinating thing. So, I know that it's supposed to be the Democrats that are irresponsible here, but for whatever reason, it was Donald Trump who took the last little vestiges of fractional reserve banking away. Now, I never thought I'd be here defending fractional reserve banking, but as recently as within the last decade, a bank needed to have 1/9 of its deposits to its lending portfolio. So it could, for every $1 it had, it could lend 9. And that means that mortgages were largely created out of thin air. This sort of thing. The banks were loaning people money that they didn't have, and everybody knew it. But at the very least, we knew that they could, that they went to the Federal Reserve and they deposited, because that's what banks do. They bank with other banks. They deposited 1/9 of that amount of money, or that's what the law was. And it's likely that they were following that because they were all sort of regulating each other in that way. But now, with this being done away with, banks are sort of asking themselves, well, how much money do we really need? And most days, 100 days for every, it's 1,000 days. It's 3,000 days. Nobody's bothering you. Money's coming in. Money's going out. There's no big deal. People are making appointments to make large withdrawals if they need to make large withdrawals. But by and large, you're just sending, magic fake money to other banks who are doing the same thing. And no big deal. The only time you really have to worry about it is when somebody says, hey, I want $10,000 in cash. It's mine and I want it. And, that doesn't happen very often. But then at the end of 3,000 days, when everything's been fine, then one person says, I want my $40,000 out of the bank. Another person says, I want my $120,000 out. They'd start pulling out their money to presumably buy gold, put it on their mattress, whatever it is that they're going to do with it. That's when you have a problem. The money simply doesn't exist. It's not the bank, any one bank's fault, although any one bank could have made a decision that we're not going to act this way. We're going to just, but the pressure of competition, I mean, it's fierce.
Well, not only the pressure of competition, but the allure of being able to just print money without any kind of restriction. I mean, there's, I'm sure, plenty of very greedy people out there who cannot resist that temptation. So, how many banks actually have been financially responsible and not gone insane with the elimination of the reserve requirements?
Well, I'm just shocked by Mark's suggestion that Donald Trump is any different than any of the Democrats or George W. Bush or anything. They're all the same.
I don't know if I heard him saying
He said,
they're not all the same. They're not.
Joe Biden is doing exactly what Trump is doing. I mean, he started fracking in Alaska yesterday.
Biden started fracking in Alaska.
Yeah, that was what he was saying he would never do for staying in office.
the pressures of politicians are such that they often the things that they say they're going to do. I'm not talking about Aaron Day here. the things that they say they're going to do, they do not do. And yeah. that is well, a very
liars.
Human
Yeah, they're
thing.
All liars so and they're all the same.
Agreed, they're well, all liars.
Go ahead, Aaron.
No, I will not say they're all the same.
Well, no, that's because they want to get elected. So they'll say whatever they need to say to get elected. I don't know why you would want that job. I don't find the idea of going to Washington, D.C. particularly compelling. But, I mean, the problem is at this point, I was out of politics. I was fully into crypto. And then being fully into crypto, seeing what's going on with central bank digital currency, and then what's going on in Ukraine, I'm looking at this and saying, well, you know, we're going to have a nuclear mushroom cloud, or we're going to have central bank digital currency and have complete tyranny where every action and behavior is monitored and tracked by the government through a digital currency system. And I don't see any politician on either side addressing these issues at all. Both parties seem to want war on drugs, just war against China, war against Russia, you name it, on that front.
We know that war is the health of the state, and that is certainly what both of these parties want. Aaron, hold that thought. I want to get Ed in here. He called in with a question for you from Florida. Ed, you're on with Aaron Day.
Hey, Aaron, this is Ed. Also, you might remember me as Deadheaded, old OG Raven coiner.
Go ahead with your question, Ed.
Yes, Aaron, given all the things that have been going on, all the money printing, everything else, the bank collapses, to say the least, the possibility of BRICS and the loss of the petrodollar reserve currency. Is there any path forward or anything that any leader could do to keep the U.S. dollar from going to zero?
I don't know if there's much, if anything, that can be done to keep the dollar from going to zero. I think that what people can do is actually get out of fiat currency and move into self-custody assets, whether it's self-custody crypto, gold, or silver. But we're in for dramatic pain no matter what. I don't see any way that in fact, the bankers know we're headed towards a crisis, and it's a manufactured crisis, because just like with the COVID situation, the model here is let's create a problem, let's generate fear, and then let's come in with a solution that's worse than the original problem. This is how we got the Patriot Act. This is how we got Dodd-Frank and all of the financial controls out of the last financial crisis. This is how we got all of the stuff that we got out of from COVID, which I don't even think we understand the depth of the tracking and the other systems and things that were in behind the scenes. So I think that that's what we're in for no matter what. But again, the Federal Reserve is a Ponzi. If you understand how money actually works, it's not sound money conceptually. So there's nothing about the Federal Reserve Act that is compelling or sustainable. And something that people need to understand, because we've been living in this haze. You know, the United States enjoyed this great position after World War II, where the war was not on our soil. And so we didn't have all of this debt and all of this stuff involved in rebuilding. And so we ended up in this phenomenal situation where we had a strong dollar and a better financial situation. But we've squandered it, just like has happened with every other fiat currency in history. There have been over 775 fiat currencies that we know of.
Wow.
Every one of them has failed, and the average life expectancy of a fiat currency is 35 years, and there's nothing unique, there's nothing different about the United States dollar.
Well, the only thing that's different is it's got the world reserve status, and there's an S-ton of them all around the planet. So, you know, they can print like a lot faster than a lot of the other ones can, right? Because there's so many of them in so many people's hands all around the planet. If they print $1 trillion, you know, there's a bunch more trillions out there to dilute. So it's like they've got this thing on lock for some amount of time until some of the world powers start changing their minds about whether or not to accept the dollar for things like oil, right? Then everything could accelerate as far as the death of the dollar. But they seem to have quite a few tricks up their sleeve.
Well, I mean, the average fiat currency lasts for 35 years.
Right.
We're into this one, this version of it, for 110 years.
Yeah,
and you could argue
it's overdue.
It's been around longer than that. It's overdue. In addition, as you said, the petrodollar, other countries, China is sick of this. Saudi Arabia is sick of the dollar. Russia, obviously, is sick of the dollar. So other countries have decided kind of enough is enough. And we certainly have been wasteful with the dollar. And people are starting to become very resentful of the United States. But on top of that, we have cryptocurrency as an alternative. We've never before had a type of money that is decentralized, that is separated from the state, mm-hmm. that can exist at scale, that can allow people to engage in peer-to-peer commerce without a government-backed fiat currency. And yeah. so that invention adds a whole new dimension to this. But frankly, if you're 0 and 775 with fiat, it's time to try a new model.
It is. Thank you, Ed, for the call tonight, man. I appreciate it. The number here, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. We've been covering the crackdown on cryptocurrency here for a long while, certainly before they came after us personally in 2021 with the Crypto 6 case. But it certainly accelerated in the last couple of years, not just with the crackdown on peer-to-peer sellers, because Crypto 6 was just one of the more visible examples of peer-to-peer sellers being targeted. They were targeting them for years prior to coming after us, and they're still targeting them. A gentleman named Mark Hopkins just got out of prison after he was selling Bitcoin on local Bitcoins. They came after him, even though he had the federal government paperwork. He had the money transmitter license from the federal government. And then he went to the Texas Banking Commission where he lived, and he said, hey, you know, what do I need to do to be legal? I'm selling Bitcoin here. I want to sell Bitcoin. And they said, oh, yeah, nothing. We don't regulate that, which is what they say here in New Hampshire. We don't regulate that. And so the feds came after him and charged him with unlicensed money transmission because he didn't have a state permission slip. And then and instead of fighting the charge, like most people, he took the guilty plea because the feds said, if you don't take this guilty plea, we're also going to charge your wife. And so even though he might have had a chance to beat that charge because, it's frankly ridiculous, you know, he didn't want them to go after his wife, and they've got a kid and everything. So he just went to prison. And
right. And like, it's worth pointing out that the feds basically charged him for not having a state license because he had their license.
That's right. Yep.
Which makes as much sense as the Texas Rangers coming after him and charging him for not having a federal license. I mean, this is absolute grasping at straws, but the problem with it is that you're guilty of any piece of paper that you sign that says I'm guilty. And that's just how that is. And by the way, try to undo it. Once you sign that piece of paper, you are done. You have gotten your fair trial. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. You are gone. How long did he spend in prison for that, Ian?
A good portion of the last year. But you
so
know,
he got like 12 months and spent like 8?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I want to get him on the show to talk about his situation, but that's just another example of an ongoing attack on the peer-to-peer market. Then you got the SEC, as you know, you brought them up earlier, Aaron, where they're going after basically everything but Bitcoin. At this point, Gary Gensler from the SEC has announced that he considers every cryptocurrency except for Bitcoin to be a so-called security. We saw how they've completely destroyed the good people over at the Library Coin, LBRY.com. They're still in the settlement phase of that case. They haven't really yet figured out how much destruction they're going to wreak against them. That's still what they're trying to do. In fact, right now, Library is being saddled with end of the case discovery. So the SEC is now hitting them with hundreds of hours more of discovery requirements at the very end, after the company has already gotten rid of all of their employees because they can't pay them anymore. And so it's basically Jeremy Kaufman's the only one left over there, and he's got to jump through all these discovery hoops now before they can even come out with a final verdict on this settlement. And then you got them going after Kraken. Kraken pays them $30 million to make them go away, and they stop their staking situation. They go after Binance USD, the third largest stablecoin on the planet. Paxos, the BUSD issuer, was ordered to freeze any further issuance of BUSD. I mean, they are going after every single aspect of this, and now they take out some of the crypto friendly banks, which means that those crypto exchanges who are trying to jump through all the hoops are having an even tougher time finding people to bank with. So, I mean, you talk about getting out of the fiat money system, they're making it harder than ever to even just simply go and buy Bitcoin.
They are, which is why to me this comes down to they are accelerating and fast tracking central bank digital currency. And this is the final battle. We're near the final war on this. And what we need is peer-to-peer commerce. We need people to not be using fiat on ramps and off ramps and to just be engaging directly in commerce using crypto, which is what I hoped. I hoped we'd be a lot further along. But one other thing, isn't the SEC also cracking down on miners as well? Bitcoin. Yeah, I actually saw something about they're trying to make somehow, I don't know what the specific language is, but make mining a security.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because that was actually what we predicted here after they went after Kraken for doing staking. I said, if they can call staking a security, then why can't they just call mining a security as well? I mean, Jeremy Kaufman told us that they, even though they were giving away the library credits to people, that was still considered a security. Because
it was considered a sale.
It was considered a sale, even though they were giving them away. And they considered it a security because Library had some of their own coin. So, like,
yep.
It's insane.
Yeah, well, and they picked Library because if they were successful with Library, then that means instantly everything else is a security. Because if I've ever seen a utility token, it's right. The Library token.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've used it. I use right. it when I go to publish content on the Library platform. I've never even contemplated speculating in the Library token. It's literally a right. utility token. And so now that they've been able to get that classification, yeah, it's going to wipe out everything else. Anybody that's done a fundraise that didn't do the appropriate paperwork with the SEC in advance, all of that is at risk. And so mm-hmm. I there are maybe only a handful of coins. Bitcoin, Bitcoin SV, Bitcoin Cash, Ravencoin, Litecoin. Those are really five that I think are proof of work, don't have centralized organizations, didn't do a fundraise. Those are the only ones, at least in my radar, that might squeak by these SEC guidelines. But it is a full court press mm-hmm. against crypto.
Yeah, it's desperate.
And so why? But why are they doing it? Well, they wouldn't be doing this. They wouldn't be going after you. They wouldn't be going after Jeremy. They wouldn't be going after this entire ecosystem if it wasn't a threat.
That's right.
And they know that they're going to be pushing towards something, and they don't want people to have alternatives. So they're trying to kill the alternatives before they manufacture a problem, mm-hmm. generate a fear reaction, and bring a centralized solution that pushes us one step closer to complete tyranny. And
right,
it's here.
This is the equivalent of the political ad. Did you know that Aaron Day hates bunnies? Right, like and all that stuff. Because essentially, what they're doing is they're making every crypto asset, everyone, as much as they possibly can, look terrible. And then they're going to roll out their central bank digital currency, which is different because we control it. And they're going to have, like you say, the control that the Chinese government has. And let me outline how that works real quick. There is an app, a very robust and very effective app, think Facebook, but even bigger and more robust, that every Chinese person can access and use, that allows them to pay for things and talk to people. It's a combined social media and payment.
You're talking about WeChat.
Is it their WeChat?
WeChat, right?
Yeah.
And when they decide that you're a bad little Chinaman, then they just go ahead and shut it down, your account, and say, yep. Well, you're restricted to just buying food and water today. Mm-hmm. Or you can't travel on the bus system today. You're going to have to walk to work. Or they can do whatever they want. And just think, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to agree with the Canadian truckers and what they wanted to do, but you will agree that people should have the right to protest. If you don't agree with that, please move to China.
Yeah.
The people should have the right to protest. And the Canadian government came after those people. They came after their bank accounts. They came after the people who donated to them's bank accounts. They did whatever they could in whatever Orwellian way to stifle free speech. And they'll do it to you.
Aaron, some of these other Republican psychopaths that you're up against in this race have been advocating something that was new to me. I mean, I don't pay close attention to what politicians talk about, but it happened to come across my radar in this case. And this is the idea, probably the most insane idea in the history of the war on drugs, to actually go with the U.S. military into Mexico and use things like drone bombings and other military violence against the cartels down there. And there's all this tough talk about, oh, we got to stop the cartels and fentanyl this, and they're dangerous and killers. And so they're actually, and it's not just the presidential candidates now, this Dan Crenshaw character who's like the young John McCain with an eye patch. And apparently now this Marjorie Taylor Greene is backing him up on this. So there's a bunch of these people that are already elected.
Vivek Ramaswamy. Well, he's unelected.
Well, yeah. He's one of the presidential candidates. Oh. That's the person we heard about it first from. And so it seems like they're trying to out-Trump Trump. Of course, Trump has advocated a death penalty for drug dealers. And so these guys are like, well, how can we take it further? And then they want to start an actual war with cartels in Mexico. I wanted to get your opinion on this situation, this madness.
Well, I mean, it seems like this issue and others are all related to the idea of we're doing everything that we can to deflect from the fact that we need to improve ourselves and improve our own country. So everything is about scapegoating a different country. So with respect to the fentanyl crisis, well, you know, nobody's looking at why people want to use fentanyl, why people might be in an emotional, you know, situation where maybe they feel like their freedom is taken away. Maybe they have PTSD from lockdowns, from business shutdowns, from being, you know, in some cases forced to take untested medication. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why fentanyl went from 25,000 deaths a year before Trump got into office to 65,000 deaths a year at the end of his 4 years. And now it's over 100,000. And the source of that spike has nothing to do with Mexican cartels. That's not what's driving this. There's obviously something else driving it, or otherwise Trump building the wall and all of the stuff that Trump claimed that he was going to do didn't work, which you never hear anybody talking about. You'll hear these Trump people say, oh, well, Trump built the wall. Trump was solving this problem. People weren't coming over the borders. The fentanyl crisis was solved. The data shows the opposite. The problem doubled in severity under Trump's watch. But what happens is when you see the polling information, Republicans think that fentanyl is the leading cause of death and the leading health problem. I don't know why. I don't know where that is manufactured. But, you know, relative, if you look at the polling from Democrats versus Libertarians versus Republicans, Republicans in particular are scapegoating all of our problems on fentanyl, and then they've transferred the blame to Mexico, which is why I think Vivek came up with this policy because he ran polls, and I think he tested it, and that's where it came from. Because otherwise, I can't imagine you would come up with that idea.
It's disturbing how many people just support him on, like, the Twitter comments. It's so disturbing. Like, if you go to Marjorie Taylor Greene's comment section right now, where she just said she endorses this idea, like, tons of people are like, you're a psychopath. But a lot of them are just the people who don't like her because she something January 6th. But a lot of people are just like, yeah, we need to fix this cartel problem in America.
Right, because we've always been able to bomb and shoot our way out of this war on drugs. I mean, isn't the right way to deal with fentanyl to end the entire war on drugs and make heroin a legally available product so there's nothing messing with the supply chain?
Well, yeah, the war on drugs has failed worse than any conflict of any kind that we've been in. We should end the war on drugs. We should have ended the war on drugs a long time ago. But the joke of it is, it's not like Mexico is the main source of fentanyl either, or opioid. Correct.
Aaron, do you want to stick with us again? Do you want to hang on? You got
sure.
time?
Sure.
All right. I want to make sure you have a chance to answer that question fully here, because it's an important one. These people are absolutely insane. What they're proposing is, you know, okay, now war, more war, because, you know, people in the state, people in the government love war.
Like, that's not going to spill into Texas.
Yeah, and they are doubling down now on the war on drugs 50 years into its failure.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and we're kicking off the second hour of the program. Phones are open. You can bring up anything, although if you've got a question for Aaron Day, he's a Republican presidential candidate, weighing in here with us on the banking crisis, the money crisis here in the United States. Also, we just got into the war on drugs, which It seems like a bunch of Republicans are jumping on the let's escalate this thing train after 50 years of abject failure. We're going to continue that
from
discussion.
From the war on drugs.
Right. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And maybe this is also it's Ian, Bonnie, and Mark here joining you on the air tonight. But maybe this is because the Republicans have sort of, to some extent, now that their guy's not in office, at least in the presidency, they've been critical of war. The Republicans have become the war critics now at the moment. And of course, we've seen that when the Democrats aren't in power, they're critical of the Republicans' wars, and now so they're critical of Biden's wars and all that. But you know, they still love themselves a good war, so that's why they're doubling down on the insane failure of the war on drugs. Trillions, of course, have been spent in taxpayer dollars on trying to win this war on drugs, but they've never really dropped bombs before, so they think that now they've got the idea that's going to make this war a success. And Aaron, you were just commenting the correct position, of course, would be to end the war on drugs, not double or triple down. But I think you're the only Republican presidential candidate who's saying end the war on drugs. You were getting into something there as we had to go to the news break. So please feel free to continue.
Well, I mean, I think the whole point is that these Republican candidates are looking to find some enemy outside of the United States that they can rally the voters around. And so it's going to be Russia, it's going to be China, it's going to be Mexico. And that's the easiest thing to do rather than to try to analyze what the problem is or even look at the history of the war on drugs and acknowledge that it's been a complete failure. But again, with the opioid crisis, the number one source of opioids is the actual pharmaceutical industry working through PBMs and distributors and hospitals and doctors. That's where the majority of people are getting their opioids, at least initially. Mm-hmm. And there's really mm-hmm. not been much of a crackdown on that. And so what I don't understand is when somebody like Vivek proposes something like this, is he saying that just because he did some polling that suggests that that's what the base wants? They want to bomb somebody and that's how people think we're going to solve this problem? Or does he really believe it? Because that to me is the scarier issue.
I want to bring in a caller here. We've got actually a sheriff in Arizona. He is David Hathaway. And for those of you that may not recall, he actually did call in a little while back. I think it was sometime last year. David is a Democrat elected sheriff in the Santa Cruz County. Now, this happens to be Nogales, Arizona. It is a border county. And David, welcome back to Free Talk Live.
Yeah, thank you, Ian, and also hi to Mark, Bonnie, and Aaron. I've been enjoying the discussion.
David, I know you were calling specifically to respond to something Mark said last night on the show, and I want to make sure you have a chance to do that. But since we're talking about the Republicans proposing to escalate the war on drugs into an actual hot war right across the border there in Mexico, what are your thoughts as an actual elected sheriff of a border county? What is that going to potentially do to the life of the people that you're serving there?
Yeah, you know, well, there's two things that don't mix, and that's drug prohibition and gun prohibition. If guns were legal in Mexico, you wouldn't have nearly the problem that you have right now. And just while we're talking about the drug war, you may remember, Ian, in a former life, I was a DEA agent, and I actually just successfully dismantled a HIDA-funded task force that my predecessor had in place for many years. It took me a while to do it because there was vehicles and evidence and personnel and whatnot involved, but I just succeeded in doing that. But yeah, you know, you'd think that we would have learned our lesson in alcohol prohibition from 1920 to 1933. You know, like that resulted in the first drive-by shootings, the first gun violence. And then that resulted in the first federal firearms law. The National Firearms Act of 1934 was drafted in 1933, the last year of alcohol prohibition, and then went into effect 1934. That was a direct result of the violence of prohibiting a substance, and then you drive the market underground, and you have clashes between the drug dealers and the cops. But yeah, it's just it's ridiculous, And I don't know who it was pointed out. One of you guys was just mentioning I think it was Mark, the opioid. No, it was Aaron. the opioid, the legal opioids, and 60% of overdose deaths for the last 5 years have been legal opioids like Oxycontin, oxycodone that are prescribed by doctors. But as Aaron pointed out, that's just ignored by the media, you know, because the pharmaceutical companies are making money on that.
Well, they're probably not going to send a drone bomber in against Pfizer anytime soon. But, I mean, what do you think? I mean, as I understand it, when it comes to the cartels, I mean, we just saw last night the story about the cartel actually apologizing for abducting some people down there, some innocent people down there in Mexico. And it was like, the police almost never apologize for killing somebody.
Yeah.
And yet here's the cartel saying, hey, our guys messed up. We're going to turn over the alleged guys that did this, and we're issuing a written apology to these people who have lost their lives. You almost never see that from the U.S. military or the U.S. police. But now they're talking.
And also,
go ahead.
The story behind that is, if you dig further, 3 out of the 4 people were documented drug dealers that were documented to be drug traffickers in the U.S. That were down there in Mexico. So 3 of the 4 involved that were kidnapped were actually involved in drug trafficking. And, you know, just to describe again my geographic position here, my county has the largest ports of entry with Mexico of all the border counties in Arizona. There's 4 border counties in Arizona, and this one has the largest ports of entry. And, you know, when I campaigned on positive relationships with Mexico, on free trade. It was right in the middle of the COVID era. I campaigned against all the vaccine mandates and social distancing laws and mask mandates and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to segue into that yet of talking about Mark's issue from last night about, you know, Democrats not or libertarians not being able to run as a Democrat. But, you know, the lessons of prohibition were learned a long time ago. Another lesson is this: whenever you make something illegal, they start to import more concentrated versions of that substance.
Yeah.
Like in alcohol prohibition, the drink of choice before that was beer and wine for Americans, like low alcohol content. But the smugglers are smart. Once you make it illegal, they start bringing in from Mexico and Canada much more potent alcoholic drinks, like, you know, vodka and whiskey and gin. And the same thing happened with drug prohibition when they made the Harrison Tax Act. You know, at least they were more honest in the era of alcohol prohibition. They actually had to pass a constitutional amendment because they know there was no provision for the federal government to ban a substance, you know, to do a war on a substance. But with the drug prohibition, they tried to do it through taxation initially. But as soon as that happened, what happened? The marijuana that was the version of choice of Americans was just ditchweed, low THC marijuana. After they made it illegal, then they started importing hash oil, sinsemilla, you know, like high THC versions of, you know, of marijuana. And then the same thing with opium. Before the drug war, the opium users in the U.S., they were primarily Asian in communities like San Francisco. They smoked raw opium, and it takes 400 kilos of raw opium to make 1 kilo of heroin. So once again, the smugglers are smart. They don't want to get caught, so they want to smuggle a smaller package, less chance of detection. And then the same, and then you progress forward to fentanyl. You know, fentanyl is anywhere from 100 times to 300 times stronger than heroin. So it's once again a smaller package, less chance of detection. So these laws backfire and they have unintended consequences. They make more lethal, concentrated forms of drugs.
Well, speaking of, you're absolutely right about all that, David. But speaking of unintended consequences, I just am curious to you know, as somebody who's dealing with this every single day as a sheriff down there in a border county. What do you think the consequences are going to be if the Republicans get their way and start dropping bombs and, you know, shooting at these cartels down across the border in Mexico? What is that going to do?
Will Americans be in danger?
Well, yeah, and historically we've had very great relationships with Mexico. 80% of Mexico's foreign GDP, the part of their GDP that they don't consume, involves trade with the U.S. We have large American communities down there in places like Guaymas and Rocky Point, Mazatlan, Acapulco. And, you know, there's always been very friendly relationships. It's always been very easy to go across. unfortunately, harder to come back. But the, right. the Mexican government has been very tolerant with, you know, in, with American policy, even American policy that is hostile to them. But if we start going to a hot war, suggesting that we're going to go to a hot war, you can imagine there's going to be trade restrictions. There's it's going to be harder for Americans to go down there. And, you know, the U.S. government is already making it hard for Americans to go down with Trump's, you know, build the wall thing. One of the unintended consequences of walls is it gets harder to get out, not mm-hmm. just harder for people to come in. It's like East Germany. Like now, it was a pilot program 12 years ago where they just started searching people going into Mexico, where the U.S. officials, U.S. government officials, search you as you go into Mexico,
wow.
and they take your money under civil asset forfeiture. Now, it's a full-time program in the southbound lanes. There's full-time structures where they're searching all the cars, and they'll take your money or your gold coins. So if you want to expatriate from the U.S., you want to get out of Dodge before we lose all our freedoms, it's getting much harder to do that. It's more
like East Germany,
where it's harder to leave.
Wow, I didn't realize they were doing that. It used to be you could just cross the border into Mexico, and then you know you didn't have any concern from the U.S. side until you came back. Guys, any comments on what David has said so far here? Aaron, Mark, Bonnie?
I would agree completely. So I'm getting emails from people who want to do interviews. I'm the one who gets all those on Free Talk Live. Ian has adroitly managed to dodge those throughout the decades. And there's this cacophony of voices that are saying Mexico's more dangerous than ever for Americans, you know, and of course they're taking this most recent you know situation with some Americans, and it's rare for Americans to get involved in anything bad in Mexico. The cartels, right. if they know one thing, they know not to mess with the tourist dollars. And
sure.
they're you know, the United States, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying, you know, any individual, I don't know, but there's this motive to make Mexico seem dangerous. And certainly there are places in Mexico that I do not recommend going, but there are places in the United States I don't recommend going either.
Chicago.
And, I haven't heard these Republicans call for I've heard them call for the military going after drug cartels, but I really hadn't considered it as an all out war. But you know, if you
there's
can,
a bill
if you
in
think
Congress
about the,
right now for it, and the and if you the, yeah, go ahead.
If a drone drops a hellfire missile on a drug dealer's compound, what do you think they're going to do? Do you think they're just going to sit back and say, "Oh, this is fine,"
mm-hmm.
or do you think they're going to strike back? What's that strike back going to look like, and where is it going to happen? I don't know, but they're probably not going to strike back in Mexico. They're probably going to strike back against the Americans who did it in America. Will there be civilian casualties as a result of this? They'll probably try not to. But as this ramps up and the tit goes for tat and the bombs drop and the bad things happen, I suspect American civilians will be caught up in this, that this will turn into fundamentally a war on American soil. And who wants that?
Yeah, we're already fighting wars on however many fronts, trying to ratchet up wars with North Korea and, you know, going on behalf of Taiwan against China, Ukraine and Russia. Can we get a war going with Iran? You know, it's just like how many fronts do we want to have wars on? And it's just going to, you know, escalate the collapse of the dollar, you know, just trying to blow money on all this destruction all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, it's inevitable that foreign countries are going to try to freeze the U.S. government and Americans, unfortunately, out of doing anything in their country because they'll just see us as a problem. But, you know, it's very safe in Mexico, Mark. Like you were saying, people falsely want to portray this, the hysterical national media, as like a war zone and everything's out of control. I live right next to the border. Me and my wife walk along the border every night. It's just safe. It's peaceful. You know, the bigger cities in Arizona, I'm more worried of walking around Tucson or Phoenix. I have 9 children, you know, and I, you know, I'm more comfortable with my daughters and sons walking at night right here along the border, both sides of the border. It's just the hype is all undeserved.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, you want to weigh in on this situation?
Well, I mean, if we start bombing the Mexican cartels, where's the CIA going to get all their money for dark operations? I agree with what you said completely. I think this is a horrible idea, and I again, this seems like more of a rah-rah, let's get everybody excited for the campaign. I have a hard time believing they'd actually follow through with it, although stranger things have happened.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, all right.
And Aaron,
speaking
of the CIA, or did you need to do something else, Ian?
No, go ahead with your point.
Speaking of the CIA, when I worked for the DEA, it was right during the time where Kiki Camarena, a DEA agent, had been killed in Mexico. So DEA went all out investigating the cause of death, like ostensibly tortured to death by drug traffickers. So I was part of that investigation. It was called Operation Leyenda. And what we found out was that Rafael Caro Quintero, the guy accused of killing Kiki Camarena, was actually running a ranch in Mexico that was the transshipment point for the CIA. It was called Rancho Veracruz. I actually interviewed the CIA pilots that were bringing cocaine from Nicaragua up through Mexico into the U.S. and bringing guns back to Nicaragua, because Congress had passed a bill preventing taxpayer funds during the Ollie North era, taxpayer funds from being used in the Contra War. So if you want to watch a great thing, it's free on Amazon Prime. It's called The Last NARC, and it actually has the real DEA agents and the real Mexicans that were in the room when Kiki Camarena, the DEA agent, was being tortured to death. And there was actually a cassette recording of him being tortured to death that was done by the CIA agent in the room. And he was identified in photo lineups by the other Mexican police that were in the room. Hmm. And this came out just late last year, and then it was removed from Amazon for a month, and now it's back on there again. It's called The Last NARC, and it has the real DEA agents, not pixelated versions of their face, not scrambled voices, and it has the real people in the room that saw this CIA agent leading the torture session and recording it and asking, what do you know about what the CIA is doing in Nicaragua? What do you know with the CIA trafficking cocaine? So it's, you know, that takes the wind out of your sails, all these DEA agents that thought they were doing something noble, actually hearing that they were fighting against another federal agency.
Yeah, I don't.
Your claim is that they, that to your knowledge, that this is all true?
It is true. I was part of the investigation. Watch that thing called The Last NARC. It's the actual DEA agents. That it's a four-part series. Watch the last one if you're short for time. And it has everything that happened in the torture session, because DEA made this a priority to find out what had happened to their agent that died in Mexico. It's all confirmed. Have three witnesses out of the room that were Jalisco State Police. They were in there during the torture session, all identified the CIA agent by name out of a photo lineup that did it. And so, you know, we know his name, but of course it fell on deaf ears when it got to Washington, because at the headquarters level, one federal agency is not going to investigate another federal agency. And if I had more time, I could tell you about when I worked in South America for 8 years with DEA, the same thing, discovering, finding, and arresting CIA people doing in the source countries, the cocaine down there. But
another,
you know,
night, David. Let me make sure you have a chance to get in what you wanted to say to Mark about what he said last night. Can you make that comment, and then we'll let you go?
Yeah, Mark last night basically was saying, of course he was talking about New Hampshire. He wasn't talking about Arizona, but basically making a bet, offering $1,000, saying, you know, if somebody, a libertarian could win running as a Democrat out there. And of course it's a different world, and I think Aria was defending the other side, saying, well, you know, you can talk on Democrat talking points and, you know, when you're campaigning to Democrats, which, you know, I'm an anarcho-capitalist voluntarist, you know, hate cops, and I'm glad, and Ian, I'm sorry you have two despicable people, two politicians on your show tonight, and I'm glad you hate the politicians, but, you know, I campaigned on all the things, on free trade, positive relationships with Mexico, you know, against all the fascist things going on, against the COVID narrative of the time. And I, as a matter of fact, I just talked to a group of 100 Democrats telling them they need to go back and find their anti-war roots and go back to being against victimless crimes like they were in the 60s and 70s during the Vietnam War. So, I mean, it's possible. I ran as a Democrat. This community is 85% Democrat, mostly Hispanic, mostly Catholic. But, you know, it is possible to win running as a Democrat.
And can you clarify, are you in for your first term or your second term as sheriff?
I'm just a little over 2 years into my first term, and I'm replacing the longest serving sheriff in Arizona. He did 7 4-year terms, and before that he was a police officer for 25 years. So he's basically doing the same thing in this community for about 55 years. But I'm 2 years into my first 4-year term.
Was he Republican or Democrat?
He was Democrat also.
So so you primaried him?
No, he actually decided to not run, and then six candidates decided to run, everybody and their brother, after he wasn't going to run. But he held the typical Democrat beliefs. You know, he was anti-gun. He thought we needed more gun laws. You know, all those, the kind of the social agenda of the Democrats, which, of course, I don't believe in any of that. But I campaigned on the strong points of being positive about the relationships with Mexico.
Right, because it is a large immigrant community there. You're also an author, the author of Immigration, Individual versus National Borders. So check out that book by David Hathaway if you need a good primer on immigration freedom. And David, thanks for weighing in here tonight. Definitely appreciate your comments.
Okay, and another night we can talk about the spy blimp they had here, and I harassed CBP until they took that down, but for another night.
Anytime, man. Thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Aaron, if you want to jump in here with, give us your elevator pitch for Mark.
Well, before it goes on, Aaron, here's a question I have. I lived in New Hampshire for 20 years almost, and and I met a lot of people running for president because New Hampshire's where they go. And they came in two flavors up to this point, which was, evil and crazy. And, the evil ones were generally the ones that you expect to win. You know, the names that are out there, the ones that we're supposed to vote on. You know which ones you're supposed to vote on. And it's not the people that I generally get to meet. There's a lot of people out there that are running like you are that just.
All right, Mark, I'm sorry, man, but we're really short on time here. And I already asked Aaron to hang in. I don't know. It's up to you now, Aaron. You didn't have a whole lot of chance to speak in that last segment. Do you want to stay for another one?
I'm fine if you are.
Okay. I know you got like a family and stuff. So hang on here more. I'll let you finish I'll let Mark finish this rambling question here in a moment, okay? More coming up here in moments. Aaron Day giving us a full 2 hours here almost at this point of his time tonight. Definitely appreciate it. His campaign website is day2024.com. And we do have more coming up here. This is Free Talk Live. Show here at 603-283-6160. Ian, Bonnie, and Mark are here tonight. Also joining us, Aaron Day. He is a Republican presidential candidate, also an early mover to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, moving here in 2009. He's, of course, the only liberty-oriented candidate on the Republican side of the 2024 primary. And Aaron, you've been sticking with us here throughout the show tonight. I really appreciate it. And I guess I'm curious, what does it take to run as a presidential candidate in New Hampshire? I know that if you want to run as like a gubernatorial candidate, it's $100 to file here. Is presidential candidate similarly affordable? Is it like $1,000 or something like that? Or what are the requirements here?
Yeah, it's $1,000 for the state of New Hampshire. Of course, you have to file with all of the states. So the states have their own various reporting requirements. And then you have to file paperwork with the FEC federally, which is something that I did on early in February. So I am officially in the race.
Okay. All right. How many are in the race? Do you have any idea what kind of competition is like?
There are only, I think Market Watch did an article on this. I think there are only like a handful of us that are officially in the race. There's a long list of people that are thinking about it, talking about it. I don't know if Ron DeSantis is officially in yet or not, but it's going to be a very wide race, I suspect.
Well, it will certainly be a hive of scum and villainy. There's no doubt about it. Your campaign website is day2024.com. You're at Aaron R. Day on Twitter. Mark, you were beginning to ask some sort of question. I don't know if you can reformulate that for Aaron. Please do.
Yeah, having lived in New Hampshire for 20 years, the flavors of presidential candidates have been basically, two types. One, your standard issue evil politician. You know who they are. They're the only choices to vote for. And then these people, these upstarts, these kooks that had an idea, a single issue on which they were running. I know you personally, and I know that you're not a kook. And I know you're not evil. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on with your campaign. What is, you're running for a regular office. You're not running some third party or anything like that. What's happening with this campaign? What can we expect?
Well, it's going to be a different campaign, which I guess you probably would expect from me. What motivated me to do this was first COVID tyranny. So I have kids, I have twins, they're 12. So watching my kids go through this situation with, you know, going to my daughter's dance recital in the middle of winter outdoors, where the kids are wearing masks, and then having to fight. I mean, and they go to a Montessori school. So I'm having to like fight to make sure that they don't have to get vaccinated. You know, that whole situation became an internal drama. And fortunately, you know, we came out the right side of it. But then going through the lockdowns, going to the gym and having to wear a mask, this was a level of tyranny that I've never experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. In fact, without a doubt, the least amount of freedom I have ever had in my entire life was actually here. In New Hampshire under Trump, a Republican president, and Governor Chris Sununu, a Republican. So I'm sitting here saying, well, if Republicans won and I'm in New Hampshire, and yet at the same time, I have the least amount of freedom I've ever had in my entire life. Mm-hmm. That's not acceptable, because now I'm looking at this with my kids and what kind of future do they have? They clearly have less freedom than I had at their age. Mm-hmm. You know, part of this was I did a road trip. I went back to Indiana and I was kind of like going back to where I grew up. And I'm like, wow, yeah, this was a lot different. We have slipped dramatically. But then the next piece of it was, as bad as 2020 was, I think within 1 to 3 years, it's going to be much, much worse with this financial collapse. And you mentioned what's going on in China with the social credit scores. There are already 23 million people in China that are blacklisted for whatever violations they had against the social credit scores. So it would be the equivalent of if you didn't report your $700 Venmo transaction in the United States, you get knocked 200 points. And then all of a sudden, it determines what school your kids can go to, what healthcare options you have, what your transportation options are. This is real. They've implemented this. There are 200 million security cameras in China tracking everybody's every move. And people might say, well, this will never come to America. Well, how do you look at 2020 in America and say it's a no-brainer that they'd implement it here? I mean, they were able to get away with it, what they were able to get away with in 2020. So my campaign is focused on this. I don't think any politician, myself included, can fix anything for anybody. Mm. So there's my pitch. No politician can fix anything for anybody. We have to stand up ourselves. So the bulk of my campaign is a campaign promoting kind of radical noncompliance. So okay, for instance, on this issue with the financial crisis, I'm launching a website in a couple of weeks that's going to do two things. It's going to allow people in a censorship-resistant way to report information about corruption, bank runs, things going on in the financial system that you may not be able to report through other channels, like Facebook.
I'm worried that they're going to stop letting you see stuff about bank runs on Twitter, and they're going to be like, oh, it's for the financial stability. Because the last few days, I've noticed like my Twitter has been getting like way less engagement. Like I tweeted just words. It was just like Free Talk Live was the first media to ever promote Bitcoin, and it got like 20 views in like 8 hours.
And that's way lower than what you would normally get.
That's like way lower. Hmm. It's usually like hundreds in like 8 hours.
Well, and you've been encouraging the idea of a bank run recently.
Yeah, and I've been wondering if that's why. Hmm. Even though when go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, even though when I search bank runs, run on the bank, stuff like that, into the search engine, right now I can still see stuff on Twitter. I'm wondering if that will go away.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I actually had a Twitter handle called Bank Run now. If you actually look, I've been saying Bank Run for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my traffic is suppressed dramatically. I can't even buy ads on Twitter still, even with paying for the blue check mark and all this other stuff. And wow, I'm trying to get that fixed because this is my only channel. Facebook, I was in jail for 120 days last year. I couldn't even post my campaign platform on Facebook. I would immediately have my account suspended. So I'm putting together this site where people can report information on bank runs, but more importantly, it's going to have a crowdsourced site for people to find crypto wallets and point of sale systems for self-custody crypto. And it's also going to promote self-custody gold and silver. So again, the basis of my campaign is we need to stand up ourselves. If you don't like the inflation, you don't like the money, use these alternative tools. The second area I'm promoting is I'm promoting health freedom. So I'm for health freedom. I'm against medical tyranny. So same concept, censorship resistant area where people can share information about vaccine injuries, which we all know has been suppressed all over the place, literally everywhere, and then share information about tools and resources that you can use to improve your health. And I will say, I mean, I recently lost 150 pounds and
congrats,
I battled
dude.
With
wow, you look nice. Amazing.
Thank you. I battled weight my entire life, but you know, part of the issue is public health guidelines. I mean, I followed public health guidelines. I mean, this whole food pyramid, I mean, we want to talk about fentanyl being a crisis. The mm-hmm. food pyramid from 1992 killed a lot more people than fentanyl has. I mean, that's truly an evil situation. So we're going to have resources for that. Then we're going to have resources for promoting decentralized tools. If you don't like the censorship industrial complex, use different tools. So we're going to promote using Signal or using Library or using a laundry list of things. So the whole point of the campaign is to empower people to stand up and be able to take control of their own lives now. Now, if enough people do that, and you know this goes viral and I get enough votes and I win, then my goal is going to be very simply to restore the Constitution, to replace every head of the federal government with a whistleblower. And the first thing that I would do would be to pardon Snowden and Assange.
Nice.
And ask Snowden if he would be the head of a national whistleblower.
How about Ross Ulbricht?
Expose
while you're at it.
Yeah, why not? Yes, absolutely. I mean, and this is an issue, and I'd look into all victimless crime. So what are the odds of me winning? Well, they're not very high, but the stakes are also really high. Like, are we going to make it another presidential term? I mean, again, if you look at what's going on in Russia right now, we are very close to being in the middle of a nuclear war. And if we get CBDC, it's over. I mean, I'd argue we've already lost more rights in this country than we have left. But if CBDC is implemented, what are we realistically going to be able to do? Because if people complied with the medical tyranny in 2020, what's going to happen when their money is censorable?
Well, yeah, I mean, we know what they're going to do to roll the CBDC out. They're gonna tell people, all right, we're going to give you a UBI, or here's another check, here's another stimulus check, but you can't get a check this time. You have to sign up for the new CBDC wallet, and then you get $2,000 or you know whatever. They're gonna use the carrot, I think. On that one, maybe initially, maybe the stick will come later, but they're definitely going to use the carrot on that one to get people on board.
Yeah, no, they'll offer UBI and then they'll offer nationalized health care. And then all of a sudden we're going to be like Canada where they have the MAID program. And so if your social credit score drops too low, euthanasia is your number one health option.
Well,
and that's not unrealistic.
I mean, as you pointed out, politicians are scum. They, they're going to make things worse, no doubt about it. And there's very little that one person can do. So even if by some miracle you are the nominee and then you do get elected, you still have 535 scumbags in Congress that you'd be dealing with there. And so the odds that you'd be able to really do much at all are pretty slim. And you seem to be, I think, on the right track as far as getting people to prepare. On a personal level, not to look to politicians to save them from this crisis that the politicians created, because it's going to be an ugly end. I mean, this system is a house of cards, and it's not going to stay up forever. It's going to get bad, and the question is only how bad and how quick. Ultimately, I think at this point. So I'm going to ask you the tough question here of the night, Aaron. I know that you're running as a presidential candidate. But you are here in New Hampshire, and there is a bit of an independence movement here. It came out last year pretty heavily, and then I think next year we're going to see some state reps put forward likely another potential run at getting a question on the ballot for New Hampshire to peacefully declare independence. And I'm wondering how you feel on that particular issue. If New Hampshire, the people of New Hampshire decide they want to say goodbye to the federal government, what would President Aaron Day say and or do about that?
I mean, I certainly don't have an issue with it at all. And so, you know, this clip will be great as I get traction. This will be played over and over again. but certainly I'm for it. But what I will say on the flip side is, having been in New Hampshire for 14 years and involved politically, 31.5% of our budget now comes from the federal government, and it's grown dramatically. And in fact, we're now seeing the Republicans are going to extend Obamacare Medicaid expansion permanently, which is multiple billions of dollars to the budget. So we are basically giving up more than 50% of the healthcare costs in the state are paid for by the federal government. 31.5% of all of our budget comes from the federal government.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest obstacle that we're going to have. But I would support it, but I would also say to people out there, you need to move to New Hampshire now. We need more numbers and we need it more quickly. And again, my personal belief is we only have 1 to 3 years. Like I think the time period is compressed. I wouldn't even get involved in this if I didn't think it was like an existential threat. And if I didn't think that my kids were going to grow up in absolute tyranny, they're not even going to make it to high school without being in an absolute dystopian nightmare situation.
Well, that's why I say, you got to get your own self out of the financial controls, right, by getting out into perhaps cryptocurrency, perhaps gold and silver. You mentioned those things earlier tonight. You know, what ratios you should do, how much you should do, that's up to you. But that's what I would do if I were in this situation. Protect yourself, protect your family. Those are actions you can take right now. And then get your state out of the union. I mean, any state, whether it's Texas or California or New Hampshire, whoever it is that goes first, the dominoes are going to start to fall after that. Other states are going to go once they see that it's safe to go. And that's the best way you can get out from underneath this, because, then you can get out from the dollar and at least protect yourself from this military-industrial insanity that's going on.
I think that as far as New Hampshire taking a lot of money from the feds, like, that could be easily fixed if we just stopped paying taxes to them.
Oh, yeah.
And, deregulated things.
But it's going to be hard to cut it off. I think that was the point, is that, once people are on welfare, it's very, including the politicians, it's very difficult to convince them to go in a different direction.
I mean, like, New Hampshire residents did not want Sununu to take millions, or was it billions?
$27 million for COVID money, right.
From the feds, but they did it anyway. So, I don't know. I think we already take away more than we need to.
I want to bring Major Payne on the line. He's been waiting patiently here to, weigh in on something. Major Payne in Michigan. Go ahead. You're on with presidential candidate Aaron Day from the Republicans.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I thought a Fiat was a little Italian car that rusted out pretty quick. But, Ian, I don't know if you remember, but I'm the one that gave you the heads up on that bill in the House of Representatives to start this bombing in Mexico and whatnot.
Oh, were you?
And that's
okay.
Not what I called on. All these conspiracy theories for the last couple of years that have seemed to come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
How could they all be conspiracy theories and come to pass? Well, this one has to do with that Silicon Bank out there. And I guess my afterthought question for your guest would be, how friendly are the Israelis with crypto? Because about 2 weeks before that CEO sold off all of his stock or whatever he sold off, the Israelis evidently pulled $1 trillion out of that bank.
Well, I doubt they had a trillion. Their customer deposits were 200.
Snowball off the cliff.
Their customer deposits were $200 billion. Are you saying this is just pure rumor, Major Payne, or is there any kind of actual evidence?
I heard a pretty reliable source. I didn't hear it over the airwaves, but I know a guy that's way deep into all these conspiracy theories, and he listens to everything that I don't get to hear, and I trust the man.
All right. Anybody heard anything about this?
I haven't heard anything about that at all. And like you said, it couldn't have been $1 trillion because they only had $200 billion total in deposits. And actually, Silicon Valley Bank represents, so all of the venture capital backed companies, or I should say half of the venture capital backed companies in bank with Silicon Valley Bank. So there are literally 65,000 startups that put all of their money in the bank. So, I mean, if I'm looking at $200 billion in total deposits, and then I consider that we've got 65,000 companies that are venture backed that are in there, I'm not seeing a big Israeli conspiracy here.
Thank you, Major Payne, for the call tonight. I appreciate it. I mean, the whole banking system is a conspiracy.
Well, I just want to commend Aaron Day for wanting to stand up for his children against actual slavery. Like, I think that the stuff that he's fighting against is the difference between the entire world being enslaved, probably permanently, until the human race just destroys the planet or dies, and freedom.
Indeed.
Thank you,
Aaron.
A lot of people have kids, and they just think, I can't fight against total slavery of mankind because I have kids, and it should be the opposite. It's crazy.
Aaron,
I agree.
The website you said you're going to be launching in 2 weeks, is that going to replace the current campaign site, or will this be a completely separate new URL?
It's a completely separate URL.
Okay.
And
okay.
I've already built some of the features. It's going to have its own social network and discussion boards and everything else.
Wow.
But it'll be an alpha launch in a couple of weeks, and then we'll be making
better over time.
Well, I'm sure you will be posting about it when that happens, and maybe we'll have you back here at some point, because I definitely appreciate you spending time with us here. Is there anything else that you wanted to get out tonight that maybe we didn't ask you about or talk about?
No, I think those were the high points. I appreciate the opportunity to get on, and I will say that the mainstream media and the establishment Republican Party is not very excited about my campaign. The Republican Party is not happy at all. This stemming in part because of my run for U.S. Senate in 2016. So it's great to have a platform and to be able to speak with fellow pro-liberty minded individuals.
Let me ask you one more thing. You did put a press release out here within the last couple of days regarding the idea of the bank run. I mean, as you pointed out, you've been promoting the idea of a run on the banks for a few years now. Obviously, it's more important now than ever. We were out yesterday in Keene in the morning, and I didn't see anybody outside the TD Bank or the M&T Bank here in town. So it doesn't seem like the panic has quite set in. It may be possible for people to go in and not have to deal with crazy lines quite yet. What are you advocating specifically?
Well, here's the problem. So there is a bank run of sorts going on. All of the information that I'm reading is suggesting that Citibank and JP Morgan and Bank of America are having such a massive flood of new customers that they're actually extending their hours of operation.
Wow.
So what people are doing is they're not necessarily going into the bank and pulling all of the cash out. They're doing something that's worse, frankly. They're actually transferring the money from a small bank to a large bank. And that is happening at a large scale. That is not what should be happening. So what they're doing is going to cause CBDC to be able to be implemented much easier, because if everything is consolidated with the top six banks, then it's going to be a lot more easy logistically to just roll out CBDC. What I'm advocating and what I did 4 years ago is I got rid of all my fiat by purchasing crypto, gold, and silver. So I'm not advocating taking the money out of the bank and stuffing it in the mattress either. I'm actually saying, to the extent that you can, get out of fiat and exchange it for alternative assets, self-custody, crypto, gold, and silver. That is what I'm suggesting. And that's what I said in the press release. That's what you can do to protect yourself. Make sure that you have possession of your own financial resources and that you're not dependent upon fiat or any bank in any way.
Related question. I mean, it's a big ask. And we've been saying here on Free Talk Live in the last several days, it's like, well, maybe you got to have a bank account to pay some bills or whatever, but try to keep the minimum possible amount in there and then look at other options for, you know, investing and like you're saying, gold, silver, and that sort of thing. But you're running a presidential campaign. I know that other candidates like our former co-host Daryl W. Perry, he was accepting cryptocurrency when he ran for president a few years ago. How is that going to cripple your campaign? Or are you going to have a campaign bank website, but you're going to like turn it into crypto? Like, how are you planning to handle the finances of this campaign with your viewpoint?
So I accept crypto and fiat right now, and I convert the fiat to crypto.
Okay.
So, but I do both, and obviously I'm emphasizing more crypto than fiat.
So you do have
you
do have a bank account for the campaign, but you're only holding it temporarily.
I only hold it temporarily, and I convert to crypto, which is in and of itself controversial. I don't know of any other presidential candidate that's taking crypto. Now, I've been using crypto politically. I had a super PAC in 2014 that was taking Bitcoin. So this is not new for me, but it is still fairly new for candidates to be taking crypto.
And I presume you still have to do all the reporting requirements and that crap for the people that donate with crypto?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And that's part of the issue. I mean, obviously somebody coming and using Monero and then having to, you know, KYC themselves is not necessarily an exciting proposition. So it is what it is. And they're going to be very critical of my campaign finance report. So I have to make sure I have to be completely on the up and up and can only U.S. donations and all that kind of thing.
Got it. All right. Those are all the questions I have. Mark, anything else real quick here for Aaron?
Just point out that it's U.S. citizens that can donate, not U.S. residents. So if you live outside of the United States and you want to support Aaron's campaign, you can do that. It's one of the rights as a citizen of the United States. And I'd point this out also is if you're outside of the United States and you don't really get to vote or you feel like your vote doesn't matter or anything like that, I feel the same way. I didn't, as a resident of Saipan, I couldn't vote for president. But what I knew I could do was I could donate to a campaign. And if you donated $25 or $100 or whatever it is that you feel is the right number to donate to a campaign, you've done far more than the voting, the vote will ever do.
Yeah, your especially vote, for president.
Yeah. Your vote will buy more votes. And that's fundamentally what you have to think about.
Bonnie, anything else you want to say? Question last minute for Aaron?
Is there anything else people should put their money into other than gold, silver, and crypto right now?
Well, I mean, you know, you can never have too much ammo, I guess, is one thing. And I would stock up on food. I mean, you know, one thing is, in the process of doing weight loss and everything else, I realized I fasted for 128 days last year and had one fast that was 36 days. And I learned, this is what I was saying about the food guidelines and the food pyramid being completely backwards. You can actually use fat as your primary food source. So anyway, this is a long way of saying, if you adjust your diet, you can figure out how you can optimize the amount of food stores you have in case things get really bad. So I would invest in some food as well, some food supplies.
Aaron, I've got some questions about fasting for 30 days. It is an amazing thing to hear. Did you find any issues? I'm going to presume you just ate nothing and consumed water, maybe some vitamins in this time frame. Did you find any issues with cognition?
Aaron, you got like 20 seconds to answer that question. Then we got to go.
No, I found a lot of clarity, and there is a spiritual part to when you do a fast that's 36 days in length, particularly once you get past day 10.
Maybe we'll have you talk about that further the next time when we have you back, because we probably will, because you're the only freedom-oriented candidate out there in the Republican field. And I thank you for your time here tonight. We still have time for you if you're on the line. That's Aaron Day, his campaign website, day2024.com. He's on Twitter as well. We got hour number 3 coming up. Phone lines are open. This is Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
At 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. It's Ian, Bonnie, and Mark joining you here tonight. We're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts. We got Ricky. He's been hanging on the line for a while now. Very, very patient tonight, Ricky, as we had a lengthy interview there with Aaron Day, the Republican presidential candidate. Ricky, what's on your mind tonight? Go ahead.
Thank you there, Brother Ian, Sister Bonnie, Brother Mark.
Thank you, Ricky.
What's on your mind, dude?
Pleasure. Ricky from the Commonwealth. Good to speak with you again.
Go ahead with your thoughts, Ricky.
Well, I had a Colt 45 revolver. In Pennsylvania, law enforcement can't keep a registry of serial numbers, but they have the ATF form, and the FFL has a computer copy and a book copy of information. So I had the serial number on my Colt removed and the barrel re-blew. Now,
is that legal?
Regardless, here's what would happen if I ever had to use it. I would point out 3 sections in the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Section 8 of Article 1, the people shall be secure in their papers and things. I believe Section 20, the people have the right to protect themselves and their property. Section 21, the people have a right to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state. This shall
I suspect
not be
the right. ATF won't give a damn about all that.
Well, that's all right, because here's the conclusion I came to.
Okay. Are you there,
Ricky? what a suspenseful
cliffhanger.
Yeah,
what a cliffhanger.
Well, I'd point this out about...
He waited 2 hours for that.
Oh, no.
Constitutions. He can call back in.
He's still there. The call's still there. He's just not there. I don't know what happened. Anyway,
maybe,
go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, it dropped.
That's funny. Article 2A of the New Hampshire Constitution says all persons have the right to keep and bear arms in defense of themselves, their families, their property, and the state.
Yeah.
And you would think all persons would refer to persons, but the New Hampshire itself has a law that says that felons can't not only carry firearms, but they can't have a rifle, a pistol, or a shotgun, which means that since the federal government defines a weapon made after 1898 as a firearm, any weapon made prior to 1898 is not a firearm. And therefore, you cannot, you would be able to possess those in most states. But in New Hampshire, they are, in fact, the most restrictive state in the union, from what I can tell, on felons possessing weapons specifically. So, you know, these documents, constitutions, and these sorts of things, they don't mean much to those in control. And this is New Hampshire. This is the free state. This is the state that is lauded here on Free Talk Live as the state where you can go and have the most freedoms.
Did Jason Gerhard put in a bill about that this year?
He did. He did put in a felons' rights bill that would allow nonviolent felons.
Oh, sure, God. Shut down, right?
To, I don't know what the status of it is. Almost certainly it would be shut down. But, you know, that said, felons generally are considered to be people.
I think what we
places.
Need in New Hampshire is just to wait out all the old, I almost said a bad word,
okay,
all the old
that.
Idiots. Like, there's just a bunch of old Democrats who are like, we can't have, I mean, Democrats should be on board with Jason Gerhardt's bill. I'm just assuming it's going to fail, or it did fail. And it's just the old people.
You're saying Democrats
old people
should,
are idiots.
You're saying Democrats should be in favor of restoring gun rights convicts' rights?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll tell you this, Bonnie.
I don't mean like 50-year-olds, Mark. I mean like the 70-year-olds that are in. Even the Republicans are all idiots.
So it's probably been 10 years, but about 10 years ago, I went, I think it was Mark Warden who put in a bill to change the rules on felons in possession. Basically, it would allow them to hold sticks, knives.
That's when they were all 60 years old.
Weights at the end of ropes and these sorts of things. And it passed committee. It passed committee to mean that it was going to be recommended as OTP, ought to pass. By the committee to the General Assembly, and then perhaps go on further. And really what it was doing was just getting rid of archaic language. I mean, to be honest, do we really need language about slung shots, billies, dirks, and daggers?
Well, interestingly, as an aside, the slungshot bill came up this year. Now, it didn't have anything to do
felons,
with felons,
right?
But they did. The House did pass the bill that would legalize, what was it,
slungshots,
blackjacks,
those things that go on your knuckles,
and brass and metallic
brass
knuckles. So the House actually passed that one. I don't know how it's going to do with the Senate.
Now, that's just generally those things were outlawed.
That's correct. Possession of those things was illegal.
I'm sure it's still legal
unless you were
for
hunting.
Right, right.
If you were hunting, you could have a pair of brass knuckles. Like you could just pop that deer right in the mouthpiece, right? Like knock him out.
That's a real honor right there.
That's
I mean,
scary.
That's serious.
Insane.
Well, I don't understand how these people, you know, justify their own thinking, but that was the way I understood the law. Yeah, so I would love to see it undone, but it was at that point, it was voted that way to pass, and then in the dark of night, somehow it just got turned around. It just changed. And, you know, maybe if I had pursued it over and over again, but ultimately it's like, who cares what these people say? You know, I'm going to defend myself if I need to defend myself. And, you know, that's the way that is. And I'm going to defend my family, because if I have the right to be free, as free as the rest of us, then I have the right to defend myself, and I have the right to defend
my family. A natural right that the government didn't give you.
Right.
Indeed.
And if you keep asking these politicians for permission, you're going to keep getting the answer no. And that's just what they do. And it's a shame.
Yeah, that is true. Let's continue here. We got Dodger on the line in Michigan. Dodger, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian, Bonnie, and Mark.
Hello. I don't always listen live, but when I do, I usually call in.
Well, you probably can't listen when you're dead, so we're glad to have you. Go ahead, Dodger.
All righty. At either rate, I usually listen on delayed, but I had to call because Mark was in, and I kind of wanted, seeing Mark as kind of the one person whose logic from listening to Free Talk Live kind of made me realize I was a libertarian. I kind of wanted to pick your brain, Mark, and feel free, Ian and Bonnie, to kind of put in, but do you know who Mike Rowe is?
Yeah, he's the I don't know what to describe him as. He's an actor. He did the Dirty Jobs show.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Well, he's also big. He does scholarships for tradespeople.
Yeah.
He does. I mean, he's big into trades. Like everybody wants to go to college and work in the corner office, but who's going to build that corner office? Mm-hmm. I just kind of want to know what you guys think is causing kind of the wussification of the, I guess, working people. I'm a tradesperson myself, mm-hmm. and it is so hard to get help.
Video games.
Well, I mean, it's been a long... Mark, the question was for you, but it's something we've been covering here on Free Talk Live for a while. The newest term I've heard is safetyism, and that one came from the Free Range Kids blog. But go ahead, Mark.
I think it just fundamentally comes down to people are taught that they're better than that. Americans are teaching their kids, and I'm talking about at all levels.
Uh-oh. Well, and that one wasn't... Mark's fault. That is what they call the blue screen of death in this case.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, I'll have to pick up the answer there on this one, and I'm trying to make a note here.
Are we still in the air then?
Yeah. No, we're still
in
the air.
I mean, I'd like to hear everybody's opinion.
Yeah,
I
think that basically this comes down to a multi-generational approach on the part of these people who want to have a wussified group of people in the United States to essentially rule over. It came down to, over the years, you had the, what was it in school? Everybody gets a ribbon, right? Like everybody wins the award. They don't have winners anymore. For many years, they've been trying to make everything super safe, right? So you can't have lawn darts. You can't have anything that might pose any kind of danger. You can't let your kids play on the playground. They might hurt themselves.
Lawn darts is a terrible idea.
Well, maybe, but people should be free to have them. They shouldn't be a prohibited item. And so, you know, we've seen the sort of the rounding off of the corners of everything over time, and this safety obsession, safetyism, as the lady behind the Free Range Kids blog puts it these days, which I think is an interesting term. We saw that rise up even worse with the rise of COVID, where truly everyone, you know, most people became obsessed with the idea of safety and like, oh,
well,
God, be safe, you know.
I'm wondering if the whole thing didn't start a lot sooner, because I think I've called and talked to the captain and Aria about this one night on the air, but I talked about how I actually, in high school, went to career day, where, and then as part of that day, you take a test, and then as part of this like questionnaire, they ask you what you're interested in. And I always said I wanted to be a carpenter. I mean, I knew that that's what I wanted to do, but then they tried steering me. Oh no, you're really good at math. You should be an accountant. Spent years of my life, chasing this one career, didn't actually get into the career, started the career very late. I was in my 30s. I've been doing this about 8 years. So
carpentry or?
Just trades work. I mean, I pretty much my specialty is tile, but I had to learn carpentry. I had to learn plumbing. I mean, there are a lot of things I had to learn.
And you probably got to use math for stuff like, you know, measuring and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They just thought because my math scores were off the chart, oh, you should sit behind a desk and become an accountant. I'm sorry. That's
boring.
Not what I want to do. I like working with my hands.
Didn't you end up, are you the caller that said you ended up leaving high school or leaving like your parents' house at 16?
17. Yeah. Yeah. I emancipated myself from, yeah.
It seems like the public schools were just doing you wrong. I mean, I've heard stories like this a lot where the public schools have tried to tell kids that they shouldn't be in the job that the kid expresses they're interested in. What is the point of that? Like, that happened to Ian as a kid.
Yeah, they did that
His,
to me.
What's it called? School counselor told him, he was like, I want to go.
No, actually, it wasn't a counselor. They had a program called internship. And I'd heard you could get a credit or whatever, a half a credit for going and working somewhere that you wanted to work for free. And so I went there and told them what I wanted to do. And she said, oh, well, I wanted to go to a radio station. Oh, we had someone do that. And all they did was have him set up banners and, you know, drive the station van. And I was like, well, that's okay. I still want to do this. So I ended up not taking that, not going in that direction with that school, but I still went and got the internship anyway, even though I wasn't getting credit for it. So, that happens. And whether it's a part of some, you know, giant communist plot or what, but we got Mark is back here with us, Dodger. And unfortunately, Mark, we had a blue screen of death here. That's what cut you off.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm glad it wasn't my connection.
No, it wasn't you.
It makes me feel very good.
It wasn't you. Go ahead with what you were trying to say to Dodger.
Well, here's what I'll say is I have spent quite a bit of time in California and Florida. And right now, those two very populous places, a person who's a contractor can write their own ticket. A person who works for a contractor can basically name their own wage. You show up on time, sober, and do your job well. My God, you're so valuable. You're gold. And, there's how many people out there running around with gender studies degrees or, a music degree or whatever it is that they have. They can't do a thing. You can start a real career that earns great money. You can start it in high school.
I really, truly think that the answer, it probably did start before this, like you're saying, with like smaller things like participation trophies, like Ian was saying. But I think that the real answer is porn and video games. It's just that people, especially men, those are things men are more attracted to than women, are getting their dopamine hits. And that's what Jay Nunaway says, but it's true. They're getting their, instead of having to work towards, being popular, well-spoken and stuff to, get the dopamine hits that come along with sex, they can just pull it up on the computer and they don't have to, work on human skills or anything. They've just become like men my age literally just like gross me out. Like they're just like children.
I'm single. I'm really not looking. I get my dopamine hits from like walking into like taking something old, tearing it apart and putting it back together. I mean, and at the end of that job, I look at the job that I did. I mean, it's not just something that I do to go to work. It's something I love doing because at the end of the day, I'm taking and making people's stuff look beautiful. And I just don't understand. I guess you would call me a Xennial. I think that I associate more with Gen X. All of my older brothers would be, I was born in 82. My next oldest brother is 79.
You were born in 82?
82, I'm 40.
Okay, yeah, okay, so you're right on the border there.
Yeah, and, all but my little brother are technically Gen Xers. So, I mean, I'm right there on the cusp. I mean, I drank water out of a garden hose and got called home when the streetlights turned on.
I did, too. I don't really get why that's, like, some kind of Gen X, like, meme. I did, too. I drank water out of...
Yeah, but you might be unusual, though, Bonnie.
Really, if all my friends in my entire neighborhood would, meet together and then be like, okay, the streetlights are coming on, we have to go home, like... for my entire life.
Well,
I feel like, just to counter that, Bonnie, my son never had an experience like that. He didn't have a childhood like I had a childhood.
Maybe it's just richer people then, because my parents didn't have, I never had video games that were like the ones that the other kids had, stuff like that, until I was like at least like in high school. I had a flip phone until I was a senior in high school, which was so weird for people my age.
My son didn't even get to watch videos until he was 5 years old, if at all. And it was we grew our own food. We had pigs. I don't think he was rich.
Yeah, but he grew up basically from that age in like the middle of nowhere though. Like I lived in neighborhoods with lots of kids or on military bases. So either on military bases, which are already really safe, or military towns, which are, you know, lots of, I mean, in like suburbs, you know.
Yeah, I think it's the safety comes into play on this in so much as parents are afraid of letting their kids play with hammers and nails and circular saws and the kind of things that can hurt you. And they can hurt you. It's absolutely true.
Maybe that's different than my experience where, my dad was handling power tools around me at a very young age. I think maybe I was right on the cusp, like at the very end of a generation where we actually still had shop class in middle school. I actually still have my eighth grade project that's hanging in my bathroom, still looks beautiful. And from my shop class in the eighth grade. And I just really think that, well, I mean, the trades are really lacking, you know, like you said, and we keep, the problem is I don't know exactly what, I don't know how to fix it.
I think Dodger, is do your best with your own kids. I mean, I don't think you can really do much else than that, and maybe move around people that have a similar mindset. So, I mean, if your neighbor,
I've had a couple road bumps, but I'm making my way to New Hampshire.
Very good, Dodger. Here's what I would say, and thank you for the call. And thank you for bringing that topic up. I mean, if you've got neighbors, people like Jay Noon, who are raising their kids to be resilient, and
he'll help you do that with your kids too, because he's doing man camp.
He is actually helping other people's kids, but obviously they have to be interested in that. For the parents that are interested in the safetyism and keeping their kids from ever getting a bump on the knee, then those are the kinds of people you want to stay away from. If they won't change their minds, if they can't be persuaded.
I think it's an interesting topic. I mean, it seems like all the men like my age, I'm 26, are just not like real men. Maybe not. I don't want to say all, but it's like a crazy amount. It's like, oh, I like had a crush on this guy. Obviously, I'm talking about like before I met Ian. And then I actually talked to him. He's just like totally a pussy and a loser and has no motivation or anything like that. And it's like they're not real men anymore. And I have a friend. She's older than me, but she's like in her 40s. And she wants to date a guy who's like a real man's man and just can't find any in Massachusetts.
I believe it.
They just don't exist.
Let's continue here with Bad Slave on the line in New Hampshire. Bad Slave, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was hoping to talk to Aaron about his presidential run and the Department of Commerce. And I'm going to bring up the question anyway, so let's go. I wanted to ask about the Department of Commerce was originally designed in order to develop a free trade system. In other words, commerce was to be encouraged, and that, as a result of time passing and a lot of bad politicians getting their fingers in it, they in fact went ahead and tried to destroy commerce and interfere with it.
That a government program actually did the exact opposite of what they told us it was going to do and be created for?
Yeah. Ha ha. Anyway. Right.
It's almost as if this is what happens almost every single time. This is the playbook.
Hang on, Bad Slave. We'll bring you back here in a moment. You can finish the point you were trying to make there. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. What does the Department of Commerce even do? I mean, I gotta say,
I'm not even sure what it is.
It's one of the ones I'm least familiar with. I'm sure it's all kinds of stupid crap. There's more coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here and bring up what you want. There's time for you if you jump on the lines now. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Mark.
And Mark joining us from a remote location somewhere on the planet. And you can join us online anytime you want over at freetalklive.com. If you appreciate the work that we do here and you want to help support the show directly, then you can do that, as over about 130 of our listeners have done. And we're, I think it'd be nice to get to the number 300, because the average, it seems like, is usually around $10 for donors to the AMPS program. So thank you to everybody that signed up. We only ask for $5 a month. So if that's all you can afford, then we certainly would appreciate that. Just go to amps.freetalklive.com. You can sign up as Lynette Warren has done. She is a silver level supporter, which means $5 a month from Lynette. It helps us advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live. It helps us do the mission that we do here 7 nights a week. And, you know, I'd be fine if we never had any advertisers again on Free Talk Live, if we could just get enough listener direct support. So if you appreciate what we do, talking about liberty, peace, freedom, cryptocurrency, alternatives to the current status quo every single night, then please join us over at amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. Bad Slave, you were calling in tonight about this Department of Commerce. They, I'm sure they're bad guys. They're part of the federal government. What do they supposedly do? I got to admit, I'm not that familiar with them.
They regulate too many things.
Okay.
You know, one of the objectives that that Trump went into, that I was exactly on board with, was a removal of unnecessary regulation. And he says that he, and according to his claim, is that, you know, thousands and thousands of regulations got removed. In other words, he said also that if they wanted to add a regulation, they had to get rid of two.
I remember all that talk, but I kind of forgot about it. And it's weird that if he did get rid of thousands and thousands of regulations, it must have not even made a dent.
Of course not.
Well, many of the regulations that exist, and I would go so far as to say the lion's share, beyond most, but way most of regulations that exist aren't laws. They're things that are created by government agencies that, you know, they just decided. And this I find to be very antithetical to a democracy or a republic or anything like this. Both of these terms, demo and public, both of these terms suggest that the people are somehow involved. But when you have an unaccountable government agency creating these rules, the people aren't involved at all. Yeah, no, like, one voted on the people that voted on this.
Who voted to make cryptocurrency be part of the laws that, you know, they went after Ian for, that were created before cryptocurrency was invented? Or who voted for, you know, SEC to decide that library coin is a token? It's like, nobody voted for that. Just these people decided a thing, and then they went to the government, and the government's like, yep, it looks like you decided this thing. It's crazy.
And
it's true.
And you're, the Commerce Department originated things like the DEA and probably ATF, and you know, these are all just kind of regulations that grew into you know, some set of bad law that is doing is hindering freedom, and nobody looks at this stuff, and it just keeps growing and growing. You know,
The only way out is to get out. I mean, they're never going to change this thing at the federal level. It doesn't matter who you elect.
Yeah. I mean, even if somebody, apparently, that the people elected covered up thousands and thousands of these regulations. It didn't do anything for me in my day-to-day life.
Of course not. Hey, thanks, Bad Slate, for the call tonight. Appreciate it. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. David is in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, David.
Yes, in New Mexico, where the men are manly and the sheep are nervous.
Okay. What's on your mind?
What Mark said. To Mark's point, it's been my position for years now that, and you can give Mark credit for saying it in so many words, what we have to do is what he said, and that is directly interpret to the people calling themselves the government, directly interpret the founding documents ourselves, tell them what it means, and then tell them that's what we're doing, and then do it in enough numbers, which is not that many, because you know, however many people that are going to come to enforce something, all you need to do is outnumber them, you know, 2-1, which ain't much because there ain't many of them, and then you just do what the founding documents say and take no lip.
What does that even mean? I mean, that what are you trying to say?
It means exactly what I said. Mark, why don't you Mark, can you tell me back to me what I just said?
It sounded to me like what you said was that if you have enough people in a given geographic area that will support you, that the government agents won't come around. And we saw something similar to that here in Keene, New Hampshire. You know, I'm not a big fan of outside the system activism, but I will say that when
within the system, let me just interject and I'll shut up. That is within the system because the system is the founding documents. The system has been bastardized by the people calling themselves the government, and they are unlawful, illegitimate frauds.
I wouldn't disagree with that. So the what happened in this circumstance was some police arrested somebody for smoking pot in Central Square while a whole bunch of people were smoking. The people who then walked from the Central Square to the police station, smoked in the lobby until they released those people. I don't know what happened to them as far as lawsuits or anything, but people going to the police station smoking in the lobby is pretty epic.
Yeah, yes. There's absolutely nothing that the people calling themselves the authorities can do about it if you just slightly outnumber them and just refuse to do anything other than what is allowed by the Constitution, not what they're telling you, because that's not allowed by the Constitution.
Yeah, it's crazy how judges, they just believe that they can do whatever they want, even though it's not the way that it's supposed to work. Like today, I went to my arraignment for my traffic ticket, and I pretty much failed a Mark Stevens script because the guy really threw me off. I asked him, am I supposed to get a fair trial? He said yes. And I said, can I get a fair trial if there are any conflicts of interest? And he said, I'd have to know what the conflict of interest was. And I said, well, just answer the question. I mean, I'm not making an argument that there is one. I'm just asking if there was, would I be getting a fair trial? And he just repeated himself. So I was like, okay. And I just said, who do you represent? And he said, I don't represent the state or myself or anyone. I don't represent anyone. So it just really threw me off. And he also never told me that he entered a not guilty plea for me. So I didn't get to ask on whose behalf. Anyways, all I'm trying to say is you're supposed to get a fair trial, but it's a big sham. Like, he represents the state. The state's the one prosecuting me. That's a conflict of interest.
Well, he says he didn't represent the state, but
who signs
his paychecks?
Yeah.
Well, I pointed this out in a trial that I had some years ago, is that the police officer was there on the stand representing the state, and the police officer got to bring his gun in. I had my pocket knife taken at the door. So tell me there's not a collusion between the judicial and the executive branch here. And, you know, like the things that the cops said, it was obvious that he didn't remember the stop. He didn't know what color my car was, for instance. He didn't know how many doors it had. I mean, these are pretty basic things. If he really remembered the stop, which is months before, how could he remember? Then, you know, then he would have rattled those things off. But the judge is like, I'm here for public safety and whatever whatever the police officer says just goes. So he lets him keep his gun and he believes him when he's pretty clear he doesn't remember anything.
Right. So, and let me, Bonnie illustrated my point without knowing it. She was talking about the particulars of what they were doing to her as compared to what, how it should go down. In other words, they were playing a game on her. And that's what the government does. The people calling themselves the government, that's what they do. They turn it into a game. They don't follow the instructions inside the box on the game called the founding documents. They play the game according to their own rules, which are illegal, and then they get too caught up in those rules. And what we need to do is call them on it. You are playing a game that's not authorized, and we refuse to play your game anymore.
Thanks for the call tonight, David. I appreciate it. Well, again,
I think I did understand what I was saying.
Mass civil disobedience is very powerful, as you pointed out, Mark. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see happen. Unfortunately, it just doesn't, you know, we don't have the kind of numbers for it. I mean, to keep it sustainable, and it's a
you don't have the kind of time for it either. You said yourself that the best thing you could do was opt out and leave. And I'll tell you what, if you want freedom, what you need to do is you need to look around the world and find the freedom that's going to best some place has your top three freedoms already. Go find them.
Oh, he meant opt out and leave the union. I see. Yeah. I was like, well, I remember.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Mark. You're talking about an individual leaving the United States. I'm talking about those who want to stay here. Their best bet is to secede, is to support a secession movement, migrate to a state where there is a strong secession movement already. So if you're a conservative, get down to Texas. If you're a liberal, get out to California. If you are a libertarian, get to New Hampshire and start and help these guys, help these secession movements create those freer places. For those that want to get away from it all, if that's something.
Doesn't
you
that
can
sound
afford,
crazy to you first? I mean, just
no,
stop
not
for
at
a
all.
Second.
Not
well,
at
listen
all.
To me. Like it's like sounds you're telling inevitable. People in East Germany in 1950, hey, just move to the part of East Germany that's that you like best. Get the hell out of East Germany. They're going to put a wall up and then you're not going to be able to leave. And if you think that you're going to secede your little tiny itty bitty state, I'm sorry. It's really not very likely.
Well, we did it before.
Maybe the government will fall apart. What's that?
We've done it before and we can do it again. New Hampshire did it originally back in the day. So
there weren't people that were like, I mean, not enough people were like standing up against the government in Germany. I feel like if there was some contingent of people that were, if they moved to one spot, they probably could have, staved it off for a while. But that
any
didn't
plan
happen. I mean,
that involves
didn't happen,
other
so can't
people
really...
doing what you want them to do is destined to fail. The
it's
only
not just
thing
other people
do...
doing what I want them to do. Ian's saying if this is what you want, this is the smart way to go about it. He's not saying, hey, this is what I want you to do. I know you're not even considering it. It's literally people who are like, I want a conservative utopia and they're up here in New Hampshire. Just go away. Just go to Texas. It already exists.
Mark, I know you think everybody is like you and can live life as a digital nomad, but not everybody can. Like our caller earlier, Dodger, he wants to do construction for a living.
Yep.
And he probably likes getting paid well for construction. And I suspect that if he moved to Mexico or Honduras, he's probably not going to get the same kind of pay that he currently gets for doing that kind of work. Similarly, people that are in other different, industries that feel like they're tied to those industries, they may not get the same kind of living that they're looking for. You know, if you're a great waitress and you work at a high-end restaurant, you're probably not going to make that much money being a great waitress in a South American or Central American country.
I think that's a really great point. But my question to you would be, will you make as much money in New Hampshire? If a whole bunch of really great contractors move to New Hampshire, they're not going to do very well.
There's not going to be a whole bunch. You and I know that. There's only a very select group of people who are willing
to... My experience in New Hampshire is they charge you a lot and just never show up.
Well, then that means they need more contractors.
Yeah,
look, there's never going to be an everything situation or an everyone situation. We need the cream of the crop. We need the best of the best. We don't need some average schmo to move to New Hampshire. We need the top of the line, best activists who are willing to work towards more independence and more freedom. And for those that just want to get away, and then there are options out there. I know, Mark, you're working on something in Honduras. I don't know how that's coming along. I don't know if you want to say anything about it, but you are welcome to.
Right now, what I would say to people, if they want to experience a libertarian place that the places Morazan.city and Prospera.hn, those are websites, Morazan.city and Prospera.hn, are the freest places on the planet as far as a libertarian goes. These are private cities with their own rules. That they city is a strong term for what they are, but these are their these are private places. And I know you can live in Morazan. I can't say for sure whether the first people have moved into Prospera yet, but they certainly are coming along well on those condominiums that they're building.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm working on a project too that's taking a little longer because of the difficulties of building buildings in places that are not free. You know?
Oh, so there's problems in Honduras just like there were in Chesterfield?
Well,
different problems?
No, Ian, what I told you is to find the place that you would for your top three freedoms.
Yeah, I got you. And I be know free that, you that having way. Problems building
I'm telling you, if you want to build a thing, you're not going to be free.
Well, actually, like there's some towns in New Hampshire that have no zoning.
Yeah, if you want to call it a town.
Oh, well, whatever.
But they have building codes.
What would you call Utila?
As I understand it in New Hampshire.
Is that a town?
As I understand it in the towns with no zoning, there's no one to enforce a building code. Like, you can just build whatever you want.
Build whatever you want and let the ice fall on your head.
What about people who don't want to live in just a condominium? No, seriously, how many? What about the people who don't want to live in a condominium and want like a farm?
Then don't move, Bonnie. If you want to live in a frozen tundra, stay there, for God's sakes.
I don't want to live in an extremely hot place either. I'm from San Antonio.
And you're not going to be free in New Hampshire. And
if you can't grow your own food, you're not going to be actually free.
Wait, Bonnie. In your entire lifetime, you will not be as free in New Hampshire as you will be right now by moving to one of these private cities in Honduras.
It'd be
you're not going
to
have
in my condominium that I wouldn't want to be in, away from my family, who probably
there are
come.
Three different locations I've talked about right here. If those locations don't please you, then you can do another one.
There are three condominium places. Like, I don't want to live in any of them.
They're not.
None of them. I can have my own like farm and huge backyard with my dogs running around. Can't I?
Yeah, sure. You want to come build a farm? Let's talk about it.
I don't think that is there right now.
Well, no, I don't have a farm to sell you. It's true.
Okay, but you said you're
having
problems.
Say you can give it to me if it doesn't exist.
You said you're having problems building
things. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
What kind of building? You said you're having problems building things, Mark. What kind of problems are you having? Is it governmental problems or what? Or are you just having
mostly
trouble?
It's mostly contractor problems. Okay. The buildings, there's just so many people building. The good contractors are taken.
Did you pay them and they didn't show up?
I don't feel like I can trust the people that will come. I didn't pay the people in New Hampshire and didn't show up. They just didn't show up to get paid. Just to be clear.
I don't know why I thought you said pay them, but
I had a crackhead contractor in Florida too. So, I mean, contractors, you're going to have trouble with those anywhere you go. You got to find a good one. And like you said, the good ones are always working. So,
yeah, I think that very much in places, in many places around the world, you're going to find when you show up as an American, they look at you like, huh. It's time to hustle this guy. So you have to, find a way to kind of get around that. And we're working on that.
Okay.
Right now, I just talked today to a guy that's going to have, you know, that can ship tiny houses out there and we can build a bunch of tiny houses and, make a free place. But I'd point out that right now, anyone who wants to can move for like $300 a month and live in Morazan.city. It's not a condominium,
right?
But it's
not just anyone. It's somebody who can work remotely, right? Because I mean, what are they going to do if they can't work remotely?
Right outside the most dangerous city in the world for women, by the way.
Oh, what's that called? What's that city?
The sea.
Are you talking about Chaloma? Or are you talking about San Pedro Sula?
Chaloma. Okay.
Yeah, it's it's not perfect.
Well,
that's
the $300 does include paying a security staff. So as long as you don't leave the Morazan.city, you're probably going to be fine.
It's like your own private prison.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. Some people might.
Like your house.
I can leave my house. I never have felt unsafe in Keene except
He's
for the
referring
cops.
To me, I think, in this case. No one's saying that this is a free place, Mark. The Free State Project is a project. The idea is to make it more free, to come here and back up the people that do love liberty and to scare away the people that don't like liberty, and we're seeing that happen. We're seeing people posting online. The Free State Project just shared recently a post by someone on Reddit who said they moved to New Hampshire 16 years ago, and they're now moving. As soon as their lease comes up, they're moving back to Massachusetts because they're sick and tired of seeing people carrying guns around here in New Hampshire. And the fact is, that's a real thing. If you want to make sure you scare away these know-it-all leftists from New Hampshire, then just start packing heat everywhere you go. Don't wear a mask. You know, create a
place. But you can't do that, right?
Well, I'm a felon now, Mark, so no, I can't do
right.
that.
Right, you
can't. I'm referring to people who, the supermajority of people who
you
are
can go
felons.
To Honduras and carry a gun if that's what you want to do.
Is that legal?
I don't think it's what Ian yeah. wants to do. Ian didn't carry a gun before the feds raided our house.
I mean, I have yes, in did. The past, on rare occasion, though. I wasn't a regular... open carrier, but I have done some open carry activism here, and I do.
But you also carried a gun when it wasn't open carry, too.
I mean, I'm not going to talk about that, but but anyway, yeah, I certainly don't do it now because, well, I've joined the ranks of the felons,
right?
as you have, Mark. But anyway, that's not the point. The point isn't about me. It's about the movement of freedom-loving people, many of whom are not yet felons, and they can come here and they can exercise that right. A lot of people don't have that freedom in other states, and as soon as you cross the border into New Hampshire, you do gain the ability to open and concealed carry without asking for permission, and that scares away a lot of the people that are status.
I've been watching this, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of New Hampshire by
yeah, the
NBC.
NBC documentary series. It's NBCBoston.com/freestate. You can watch them for free online. They're great so far. What have you been thinking, Mark?
I think I've watched the first 8 or 9 of them.
Okay.
But you didn't watch the Crypto 6 one yet because you're
haven't
in
haven't gotten to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're in that one.
I know.
Really nice
Good.
Looking interview and everything.
I'm a beautiful man. So what I saw when I... watch this was I saw these they found a handful of liberals to sort of stand against
yeah,
the free staters
amazingly.
But they look so pathetic.
They
I mean
do,
I just can't
they?
Help but saying, you know, as a person who doesn't you know really the Free State Project isn't totally my thing, you know, I support it and I like it and I hope that people are successful, but I just don't believe in fighting for freedom. It doesn't mm-hmm. make sense for me. But these liberals, they're like, and they're coming here and they're running as Republicans and Democrats, misrepresenting what they believe to people. They don't even believe the party platform. They just look so pathetic.
And what is the common theme?
Why don't you just move someplace and be happy, lady?
They will.
What is the common theme among all of them except like 2? They're all really freaking old.
Yeah, that's true as well.
Need to do is wait 10 years and they'll die.
Well, I mean, some of them are going to die off. Some of them are going to move
Florida's
away.
Full of old people that have moved from up north.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, somebody can leave any time.
We are blessed in the quality of our enemies here in New Hampshire, I think.
Old and frail.
Well, I mean, there's that. Some of them are younger. Xandra's younger. She's probably in her early 40s or whatever.
I forgot about her. But she's also frail because her heart could go any minute.
But a lot of these people have moved here. A lot of the bad guys in this documentary series, the main baddie, her name is Xandra Hawkins. She's in the majority of the episodes, although she
because
wasn't...
they couldn't find anybody else. Understand that.
Well, it's hard to
they
get.
They found dozens and dozens and dozens of free staters.
Yeah,
you can't find dozens of people that will spend any kind of time to fight the free staters.
Well, I mean, that may be true, Mark, but there's a lot of them that just aren't willing to go on camera. They're paranoid.
They're just like stupid Twitter haters, though. Are they really doing anything?
There's a lot of free staters that are too paranoid to get on camera.
That's true as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the thing.
Probably
that,
even more
yeah,
as a percentage.
Yeah, I didn't get interviewed. Well, I was on the cameras a lot, but not really on purpose, just because I was around.
Well, you chose to not. You didn't want to be interviewed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't want to be interviewed.
And that was one of the takeaways that the producers said they were kind of surprised at, was that on both sides of this, they had a tough time finding people who were willing to talk. Now, I think that they had an easier time with the free staters because the status are notoriously paranoid. They constantly are worried about you know, whether or not they're going to be being interviewed by an actual free stater.
Yep.
And I'm not speculating on this. I know this is a fact because that's what happened with the Monadnock Showdown program here in Keene when they tried to approach the Stop Free Keeners to get them to come and debate me on a debate show. And they got super paranoid and they had to have like a meeting of all the founders of Stop Free Keene. And then they had to, you know, determine whether or not the hosts of the show were secretly free staters. And then ultimately they chose to not appear unless they could appear all by themselves.
Which was defeating the purpose of the show, which is supposed to be two opposing groups.
Anyway, out of time tonight. Mark, hopefully we'll be back next week on Tuesday. We'll see you online in the meantime on freetalklive.com. Join our social media platform at social.freetalklive.com. Some of you have wanted to support Free Talk Live's mission on a monthly basis, but don't want to support Patreon. Now we have an alternative that also helps our premier streaming platform, Odyssey. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join at the top of the channel. You can subscribe for $5 per month, and unlike other subscription services, Odyssey adds their processing fee on top, so it'll cost a little over $5 per month, but Free Talk Live will receive the entire amount you pledged. Higher donation tiers are available if you're feeling so inspired. You'll get a special membership badge that's visible in the Odyssey chat room, and if we get enough supporters, we may enable members-only chat. This new subscription method is a great way to decentralize our direct listener support away from just Patreon and also support a libertarian-run business, Odyssey. Please visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join to subscribe to our Odyssey channel and help support spreading our message around the planet. Visit video.freetalklive.com and click Join today.